of Native Health Radio and discover how sacred medicine can save modern life. Honest, direct, funny, informative, it's programming that makes you think. Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Anna Nicole Smith is dead. The larger-than-life celebrity found unconscious and unresponsive in her Hollywood, Florida hotel today, rushed to the hospital. She was pronounced dead this afternoon. Police Chief Charles Tiger.
The cause of death will be determined by the medical examiner at the Broward County Medical Examiner in Seminole. Police Department will continue its investigation into this matter.
She packed a lot of life into her 39 years.
Anna Nicole Smith's life was a bizarre combination of controversy, rumors, and tragedy. With her voluptuous figure and blonde hair, she first became known as a Playboy Playmate of the Year. At age 26, she married 89-year-old oil billionaire J. Howard Marshall. He died 14 months later, and a huge battle began over his estate, which continues to this day. There were constant stories about her battles with weight gain and substance abuse. In recent years, she did commercials for Trim Spa diet pills.
Like my body.
Last year, Smith's 20-year-old son died suddenly. Methadone and antidepressants were found in his system. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
An autopsy is expected tomorrow. Anna Nicole Smith, dead at 39. Enough prosecution in the trial of Scooter Libby. CBS's Barry Bagnato reports.
Prosecutors have rested, believing they've presented plenty of evidence showing that Libby lied to FBI agents and to the grand jury and that he obstructed the CIA leak investigation. They closed with NBC's Tim Russert, who provided pivotal testimony. To try to counter that, the defense is putting NBC's credibility on trial.
Libby is accused of lying to investigators who were trying to find out who leaked a CIA operative's identity. Autism. Increasing numbers coming out today from the Centers for Disease Control, sparking a lot of interest. Is there more autism or is there more diagnosis of it? Portia Iverson, co-founder of the Cure for Autism Now Foundation.
When my son was diagnosed 12 years ago, we were told autism was a rare disorder affecting between 2 and 4 children in every 10,000. And now today the Center for Disease Control tells us that it affects 1 in every 150 children. I don't think awareness alone can make that difference, and the testing for autism has not changed.
There is so much snow in western New York State, they don't know what to do with it.
They have to bring dump trucks through to pick up truckloads of snow.
At 5'2", Sue DeBlasi says she can't begin to see over the 6- and 7-foot drifts. More snow expected tonight. 20 deaths attributed to that severe cold. So much for the notion that any publicity, even bad publicity, is a good thing.
You are about to learn a lesson in responsibility, Shake.
I'm responsible.
Hardly a blip in the ratings for the Cartoon Network show with the ad campaign that briefly paralyzed Boston. The blinking electronic devices planted around Boston promoting Aqua Teen Hunger Force caused authorities to shut down bridges and highways, cost the Turner Network $2 million to pay for the inconvenience. It did not do anything, apparently, to build the show's audience. The market's closing down today. The Dow down 29. The Nasdaq off a couple. Same story for the S&P. This is CBS News.
Tiger Balm presents football superstar Jerry Rice.
Foxtrot. I can't believe I'm dancing with Jerry Rice.
I can't believe dancing is as hard as playing wide receiver.
Tango.
I'm sorry.
You okay?
Yeah, how do you manage all the aches and pains?
Tiger Balm.
Really?
Tiger Balm works fast and lasts a long time.
Samba.
Whoa. Oh, sorry, I'm such a klutz.
Maybe we should stop.
No, just get me some Tiger Balm.
You sure?
Just get me the Tiger Balm.
If you suffer from aches and pains, go for the balm. Tiger Balm. Now in a convenient, easy-to-apply patch. At drugstores, mass discount stores, supermarkets, and health food stores everywhere.
Hello, would you like to be more successful with the opposite sex? I'm Ted Baker, and my program can teach you how to attract a mate. Listen to this.
Ted told me about logging on to freecreditreport.com. I learned that my good credit could help me buy a car and a boat, and now chicks dig me.
My patented system could work for you, too. Log on to freecreditreport.com to get your free credit score and report. A nice condo could make you irresistible.
Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at freecreditreport.com. Get the score.
Even the White House seems a little put off by the Republican flap over the military transportation assigned to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Calling it a silly story, White House spokesman Tony Snow is urging critics to chill on the issue of what military aircraft Speaker Pelosi will get to use.
Again, I think this is much ado about not a whole lot. It is important for the Speaker to have this kind of protection and travel. It was certainly appropriate for Speaker Hastert.
But the Republican National Committee didn't get the message. It's calling the matter Pelosi's power trip and declares that nonstop Nancy seeks a flight of fancy. Mark Knoller, CBS News. The White House.
Ken Pendleton, a military judge today granting a Marine corporal's request to withdraw his guilty plea to charges of murdering an unarmed Iraqi civilian. The judge, though, warning Corporal Trent Thomas he could be sentenced to death if convicted. Thomas says he no longer believes he's guilty and was following a lawful order. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. You'll never find a Rolex watch in a superstore, or for that matter, an Oreck vacuum. That's because you're judged by the company you keep. If you want an amazingly powerful 8-pound Oreck vacuum, visit one of my Oreck stores. Or call me at 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200, and I'll send you one to use free for 30 days. It's worth the time, and it won't cost you a dime.
So you're a consultant?
Yes, sir.
What's with the wall of sticky notes?
It's my small business accounting system. Unpaid invoices go on the purple ones.
And the green?
New customers.
So unpaid bills are the yellow ones.
How'd you know?
I took a shot. You know, there's an easier way to manage your business.
Yeah?
Yeah, QuickBooks. You can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you write checks, send invoices, see who's paid and who hasn't.
I'll switch. So, need a couple hundred sticky notes?
I'm going to pass on that. QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at Office Max, Best Buy, or Amazon.com.
B. Collins!
Welcome to another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show from soggy San Francisco. We're live from the left coast. We've got a lot to talk about over the course of the next 3 hours. This program is live, unscripted, unrehearsed, and subject to change without notice. A work of art in progress. Something like that. Two things we won't be discussing on the program today. There will be no coverage or commentary on astronaut Lisa Nowak and the bizarre love triangle. We'll leave that one for Fox. And what will they do at the Fox News Channel as they attempt to keep covering the astronaut story and the tragic death of Anna Nicole Smith? I'm sure they'll send a reporter over to Hooters, where flags will be at half staff. But that's all I've got to say about Anna Nicole Smith, except, unlike Ted Haggard, she was always completely heterosexual. Coming up in about a half an hour, former U.S. attorney, a federal prosecutor, Elizabeth De La Vega, will unveil her attempt to indict George W. Bush. She's written a book, The U.S. versus George W. Bush et al., and we'll give her an opportunity to lay out her indictment coming up in about half an hour. Next hour, our regular contributor on military and veterans affairs, Scott Dick, will be with us. We're going to talk about the actual headcount of the so-called surge, the escalation of U.S. presence in Iraq. It's close to 50,000, not the 21,000 they tell us. Also talk about the contractors there. 100,000, many of them really qualify for the term mercenary. And we'll talk about the breaking news that we brought you yesterday, the mistrial at Fort Lewis, Washington, in the court-martial of Lieutenant Aaron Watata. All along the way, you're invited to call in. And in the third hour, it's wall-to-wall phone calls in the free speech zone. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And you can always email me, peter at peterbcollins.com. Thursdays, we kick off the show with Faz Shakir. He is the research director of the Center for American Progress in Washington, co-editor of their Daily Progress Report, and he joins us from chilly Washington. You're still in a cold snap, right there, Faz?
Oh, it's quite cold. We've had a snow a couple times this week, and it's down in the single digits.
Whoa. Well, I had relatively balmy weather when I was there 2 weeks ago. Thank you for that. So I wanted to start off with the action or lack thereof in the United States Senate this week. I had a chance to watch on C-SPAN part of the debate when Mitch McConnell threw up the Greg Judd roadblock, which is this resolution intended to divide the Democrats the way the Warner and, to some extent, the McCain resolutions would probably divide Republicans. And the Republicans have used this effectively as an obstructionist tactic and stalled their way through this week. Do you think the Senate is going to finally break loose? And are we seeing some defections in the form of regret from Senator Warner and Senator Hagel about voting in lockstep with the Republicans to sidestep the debate this week?
We are indeed. After the vote took place, then we saw a group of senators, including Chuck Hagel and including John Warner, come out and say that they wanted to work towards a compromise that would allow them to vote for the anti-escalation amendment. And so it looks like there might be some traction to finally get their votes. But I just want to comment on how ridiculous it was that, you know, in the week leading up, we heard a lot of rhetoric from people like John Warner and especially Chuck Hagel, who was out there saying, you know, you have to be bold, you have to be a leader, you have to go on the record. I want all 100 senators on the record on this. If you can't take the heat, you know, go sell shoes.
Right.
Heard all this over-the-top rhetoric, and when it came down to it, you know, I guess he needs to go sell shoes because he didn't have the courage to cast the right vote.
Well, that's unfair to shoe salespeople.
Well, I don't think he was saying that they don't have courage. It's just an easier job, and maybe that's debatable too. But he certainly made the job of being a senator look very difficult because he couldn't stand up on principle when it came down to it.
So what did they do to him? How did they get him to vote that way? Because as I said, I was watching C-SPAN as they took that vote, and I was shocked because, again, his rhetoric was still in support of the resolutions, and then he said, well, but I'm going to vote with my colleagues here because we need a level playing field and, you know, robust debate. I mean, his goals cannot be enhanced by the dilatory tactic of this Greg Judd amendment.
That's right. I think when it comes down to it, this is a pattern we've seen from Chuck Hagel for like 3 years now. He talks a pretty good game, but when it comes to his voting record, he seems to shy away from casting that vote that'll isolate him from his party. That's why he has one of the most conservative voting records, because I think he really cherishes that for its political value, and given that he's thinking about a run for president, I'm sure that was weighing in his mind that at least he can go to his base and say, look at my voting record, just look at that, don't worry about my rhetoric, you know, just look at my voting record. So I think he was really guided a lot by the political dynamic here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we see that what has passed for debate over Iraq in the last few years in the world's most deliberative body, the United States Senate, has been really cute little phrases designed to stymie debate. A year ago, it was cut and run. When the Democrats proposed, timelines for redeployment and withdrawal in the heat of the campaign, demagogues went forth with this cut and run line. Well, now they're hiding behind this Greg Judd amendment, which is kryptonite to the Democrats because it would put them on record as either supporting a resolution says that we'll never cut funds for the troops in Iraq, or opposing it. And at this point, only Russ Feingold has exhibited the courage to start to vote to cut off funds. Most Democrats are still highly afraid of that, and unfortunately the Republicans know it, and they smell it the way a dog smells a fearful human being.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about how they're trying to divide the base, but there was one positive that I thought came out of it. There were two Republicans who voted with the Democrats, and I think it was Norm Coleman and Olympia Snowe, if I remember correctly.
I think you're right. Mm-hmm.
So that, I think, was a positive development. So mm-hmm. I think the more you get a couple of people peeling off, the more pressure it puts on them because you can use them to stir the rhetoric. But fortunately, there weren't Democrats who peeled off of it, and mm-hmm. I don't count Joe Lieberman as a Democrat any longer.
I agree.
So we largely, the Democratic Party held its own. So despite all these various amendments and attempts to divide, at least when it came down to the vote, our side consolidated, and we got two Republicans to join.
Well, and on the cloture votes, I've seen we're bringing some of the weaker Democrats along. I think of Ben Nelson and also the Bill Nelson from Florida. Mm-hmm. They're not brothers, but they are the most cautious centrist Democratic senators who I can think of. And at least on the cloture vote, the whether to continue debate, they're siding with the Democrats. But that begs the bigger question, which when we blow all the smoke away, Faz, are there 60 votes in the Senate for any resolution other than the Gregg resolution?
If you count up the Republicans who have signed that letter with Warner and Hagel, there's seven, so you add up to the seven, and no, it doesn't come to 60, but the hope is that you reach a tipping point. That is that, if you get those seven Republicans on board with all the Democrats, then the momentum starts to build, and some Republicans fear going in voting in the opposite direction because they'll see that their own contingency is not voting unanimously on one side, and so they'll feel like they have to vote with the Democratic version. But there's one point I wanted to return to, and I thought you brought it up. It was a good point about how the Republicans have changed their talking points and their tactics. And one thing I wanted to add to that is that, remember, they were the ones who were accusing Democrats of being the obstructionists. Mm-hmm. And they railed and railed for months on end about how Democrats were using the filibuster to, sidetrack judges and do all sorts of things. They were very upset about that, the use of filibuster. Remember, we came down to the constitutional battle over the use of filibuster, and here they are. Of course, when you're on the other side, now that tactic is looking pretty good, and they're not really being called out on their use of that right now.
I'm sure they're really glad they didn't nuke it.
That's right, exactly right. I mean, otherwise, I think we'd have 50 or 51 votes to get this through.
Yeah. And, Faz, we do like to be as accurate as possible. A listener says that you may have gotten the female senator from Maine confused. The caller thinks it was Susan Collins. And not Olympia Snow.
I was hesitating there, too. I wasn't sure which one it might be. So.
Well, we have the Peter B. Collins Apologia Chorus just ready for you right now.
Thank you.
And we'll continue in just a moment with Faz Shakir. If you'd like to comment on the issues we're discussing, grab a line right now, and we'll talk with you next. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number, 888-573-8372. My guest is Faz Shakir from the Center for American Progress. Catch their daily progress report free in your email. Just log on to progressreport.org and sign up to get it every day. More straight ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Postgraduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm your humble host, Peter B. 21 minutes after the hour, we continue with Faz Shakir from the Center for American Progress. He's co-editor of the Daily Progress Report, which is chock full of great news, information, and analysis. And Faz, I wanted to get your take on the Scooter Libby trial and the remarkable testimony, the way Patrick Fitzgerald structured this. His coup de grace is Tim Russert's testimony. And Russert was on the stand two different accounts, 10 minutes, 12 minutes yesterday, under the direct examination of Fitzgerald. And then he had to sit through, what, 4 or 5 hours of cross-examination from the defense attorneys for Scooter Libby. And if people want to get more information at thenation.com, David Korn has a kind of a detailed article that's up right now. But it appears that they got increasingly desperate to crack the credibility of Tim Russert and failed.
Yeah, no, I mean, the one thing that Patrick Fitzgerald does well is he methodically goes through the argument and I think lays out the facts in a way that's very difficult to rebut, and that's why I think he kept this case very narrowly focused on the fact that Scooter Libby lied to him, and that's all he had to prove. And he methodically set out to prove that, and so he started with the people who were closest to Scooter Libby. That was the vice president's former spokeswoman, Kathy Martin, R.A. Fleischer, first laying out, you know, what they knew and what they knew about Libby. Then he went on to the journalists and said, how did you learn about this, and what stories did you hear from Scooter Libby? And then finally he closed with Tim Russert to make sure that the jury understood that the story Scooter Libby was telling, that he had learned Valerie Plame's name from Tim Russert, was completely false. He brought Tim Russert on and said, when did you learn about Valerie Plame's identity, and Russert said it wasn't until long after Libby and I had spoken, and so I wasn't the one who told Libby about Valerie Plame. So now I think his story has been credibly shot down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as we look at this, I believe the movie version of this will be called The Art of the Smear.
It all leads back to the vice president and to some extent directly to George W. Bush himself, because there are indications that Bush did authorize the leaks to undermine the credibility of Joe Wilson. And it's pretty clear that it was Cheney who relayed the declassification of Plame's identity to Libby, claiming that he got it from the president. So this all undermines the White House posture ever since the story broke that whoever leaked it would be fired.
You know, my reading on the situation is slightly different from yours, and that is that I think it shows how much power Cheney has in the White House. And it shows how at least Bush, and especially in this case, was very much a pawn of Cheney's agenda. Because although Bush, I think, ordered the declassification, it was done at the behest of Cheney. Cheney pushed it. It was not even clear if Bush signed on to it. Remember, Cheney told Libby that Bush had signed off on it. So that's how we know that Bush, or we think that we know Bush did it. So, and then Bush later said he had declassified certain portions of the National Intelligence Estimate, which is completely separate from Valerie Plame's identity itself.
Right.
So I think it really shows how much Cheney was really maneuvering in the back rooms and pushing his agenda very hard to smear Joe Wilson, to get out lies and deception about what the administration knew before the Iraq War, and how alarmed Dick Cheney personally was about the fact that there were whistleblowers out there who could deliver damaging blows to his own credibility.
Mm-hmm. Billy wants to join us from Capitola with a comment. Hi, Billy, you're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
You know, I wanted to call you yesterday, except you had that thoughtful caller who talked about the kind of callers who just go on and make noise and stuff, and I thought it would be obvious who you were talking about. I couldn't call. See, here's the problem, because you guys laid it out exactly right. So now we have Libby. He clearly, you know, lied. He's looking at all this time. Now, if he believes, and here's the key, if he believes that he's going to jail, he rolls over on the vice president. But the only way he believes that, here's the part, is if he knows that the pardon is not coming.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get a Washington reporter to ask Bush a question that positions him the way that, you know, Congress has been positioned for, like, when they made him vote on Iraq and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's simply this. You say you believe in the rule of law. You said if somebody was guilty, will you follow through and promise us now that if somebody is found guilty, there will be no pardon for someone in your administration who broke the law?
Well, even if he said that, he'd issue a signing statement that would, you know, permit him to ignore it later.
Darn, I thought I had him.
Yeah, Faz, you have a comment there?
I think your caller's nailed it there on the head. I think that is the big issue, because it's remarkable to me how consistent at least the Libby side is being in their really unbelievable story that somehow he forgot all this and he has a faulty memory, and they're going to call Rove, Dan Bartlett. The White House is allowing all these people, even in Cheney, to be dragged into this. I think because they're happy with Libby just being sentenced and having a guilty verdict against him, and I think down the road just him being pardoned. So I think that's where this whole thing is going, and I think your caller's got it right about let's put the pressure on the president now. Mm-hmm. Let's get some answers on the record. At least it will damage his credibility in the end when he pardons him.
Yeah, would you say that perhaps that Russert and the press might be upset enough with this administration and the way they abused and used them that they're ready to stand up and ask that kind of question?
I mean, he's been asked it a few times, and he just dodges it because it's very easy to dodge at this stage, because all you have to say is, well,
I'm not considering
it right now. Nobody's been found guilty. Let's let the trial process play out.
Yeah, can't comment on an ongoing trial or investigation like that. Faz, as a recent law school graduate, what would your advice be to the defense right now? Should they put Scooter on the stand, and should they put Cheney on the stand?
Well, I'm a little bit biased because I want to see the most pain inflicted on the White House. So I would, you know, I think, you know, if I'm honestly trying to represent Scooter Libby and do my best to try to get him off, and accepting his story that he simply didn't know the truth and he just had a faulty memory, then you do have to get, I think, Cheney and Karl Rove to say that, you know, that they were both the ones who instructed him, and that what he did was kind of according to their orders, and that and that they were the ones who were pushing the story. Because as long as it looks like Libby was the front man, as it has been portrayed by mm-hmm. Patrick Fitzgerald, then it's bad for him. He needs to be look like he was just a pawn in this operation, not the guy leading the charge.
Gotcha. Faz Shakir, we'll talk next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me right here on KRXA 540 AM for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay Area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund as soon as you need it. In 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, the choice is yours. The personnel at Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax return tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today, located at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to take a copy of your 2005 federal and California returns and W-2 1099 info for 2006. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today at 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
We're going.
Tom Hartman.
There were some very weird moments in Bush's speech last night. He never once mentioned diplomacy. He didn't mention stem cell research. He didn't mention New Orleans, an American city where 1,500 people died.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
And he didn't even have the decency and dignity to mention New Orleans because it is another example of the failure of conservative ideology.
Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings, 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. One of the rubrics of the Republican Party is responsibility and accountability. We heard about it all through the 1990s when the personal behavior of the president gave them pause. And they drove the country on a binge into impeachment
trying to hold the president responsible for his lies about private sexual activities. And where is the responsibility when we look at the incredible blunders made by this administration? Just this week in the Waxman congressional hearings, Republican Tom Davis said, oh, we don't want to look at the mess in Iraq or the problems caused by Paul Bremer in the occupation. That's just a bunch of finger pointing. Well, I disagree, and not so respectfully. I believe the American people are entitled to hold to account those who we elected as our leaders who swore their allegiance to the Constitution of the United States, not to some ephemeral political rhetoric or campaign promises or, you know, other idle male promises that Lee Marvin might talk about, but they swore to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. And I believe that on many significant counts, they have failed, and failed in a way that is criminal. Joining us this half hour is former U.S. Attorney Elizabeth De La Vega. She worked in the San Jose office of the U.S. Attorney and retired from there. She's published a book called U.S. versus George W. Bush et al. And today, she is in her role as a private citizen. I want to underscore that. But I have asked her to open this segment by giving the opening remarks, the opening statement that a prosecutor would issue before a grand jury in attempting to win an indictment of the president and his colleagues. Elizabeth De La Vega, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, thank you very much. And I just have to say one thing. You promoted me. I was an assistant U.S. attorney and in charge of the San Jose branch, but I was not the United States attorney.
Okay. I think I said you were a United States attorney.
Oh, well, that's a little different. That's different. I just don't want anybody thinking that I'm portraying myself as a U.S. attorney. It's an assistant U.S. attorney.
And as I am seated, I sit corrected.
Okay. Thank you so much.
And now, Elizabeth De La Vega, shall we invite the judge into the courtroom here?
The court's in session. The court's in session. Now, here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Here come the judge.
All right. We'll dispense with that now. And you may assume your role as the prosecuting attorney in these proceedings. And I'd like to give you 5 minutes or a little longer here, without interruption from me or the judge or the defense, to lay out what you see as the bases for indictments of the president and his administration.
Okay. And this is a grand jury proceeding, so there is no judge in there. But the case under consideration is a hypothetical indictment of the president, the vice president, former Secretary of State Colin Powell, our current Secretary of State and former National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, and our former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. The charge is called conspiracy to defraud the United States, and that is based on a specific statute that is in the U.S. Criminal Code. And what it means is, first of all, conspiracy in the law is a very neutral term. It does not mean some kind of sinister secret decoder ring kind of thing. It's simply an agreement to commit a crime. It's very neutral. And to defraud the United States, as this statute is interpreted to mean, means to use deceit or any form of what's called craft or trickery to interfere with the operations of another branch of government or an agency. In this case, the branch would be Congress, and as those of us who took civics know, the Congress is obligated and has the authority, among other things, to declare war and to authorize the use of funds for hostilities against foreign nations. So the way this crime worked in this particular situation is that sometime, and we don't know the earliest date, but we do know that at least by September of 2002, but much more likely in advance of that, these five members of the administration and others decided to make sure that the country was going to go into war, was going to invade Iraq. And if they had done that merely by laying out their arguments and the evidence in an honest way, there would not have been any crime. But they didn't do that. So you have a situation where behind the scenes, starting right after September 11th, the president and his senior advisors began not only requesting a formal plan for war, but actually revising it over the months. And by September of 2002, we had a formal plan to invade Iraq. And at the same time, we had also, as a country, been invading Iraq. By July of 2002, Donald Rumsfeld had authorized more than 50 airstrikes that were likely to kill more than 30 Iraqi civilians. We also had 40,000 troops over there, and we had 350,000 tons of munitions, and we had moved funds from Iraq, from Afghanistan, rather, to preparations for Iraq. So by the time September 2002 rolled around, the war had actually already started. But the president, on September 4th, went out and told the American people and the world that he was starting a, quote-unquote, open dialogue about the war. Now, that on its face was a false and fraudulent statement because the war had already started. And, in fact, the very next day, the United States and Britain launched 100 airstrikes against Iraq's defense facilities. Beyond that, the only reason that they talked about an open dialogue was that the polls showed that the American people were more likely to go along with an authorization to use force if it seemed like there was some kind of consultation with the public and with the world, in fact. But what they proceeded to do then was, whereas the statements they've been making publicly before were generalized false statements, such as that Iraq is a grave and gathering danger, when behind the scenes the National Intelligence Estimate said no such thing. In fact, it said that Iraq's weapons facilities had been destroyed. Those generalized statements weren't working. So starting in early September of 2002, with the specific expressed goal of getting the authorization to use military force by the middle of October, Karl Rove and the president and vice president and so forth set about on a campaign of quote-unquote marketing the war, and then they used more specific deceitful statements. For example, they talked about aluminum tubes, and I can go into a little more detail about that. When behind this, and they claimed they were only suited for nuclear weapons. That was not at all the evidence they had behind the scenes. They talked about chemical weapons, and they used half-truths to convey that information. They suppressed information about the cost of the war that they knew were being told them behind the scenes. They suppressed information about the number of troops. And throughout the whole fall and winter of 2002, they proceeded along this path to the point where they actually even flat-out lied about the progress of the UN inspection. So the day before the war was announced in its formal capacity, in its formal way, the president actually came on national TV and said, we have to invade Iraq because the UN, the Iraqis are not cooperating with the UN inspections. Well, in fact, that was just a flat-out lie because the inspectors were begging us not to invade Iraq. So in the end, in virtually every area of their claimed arguments and proof for the war, the president deceived the American public using the same techniques of fraud, which would be statements made with reckless disregard for the truths or half-truths or just artfully worded statements, the same kind of statements that were used in the Enron case, and those are, of course, what led to their conviction.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth De La Vega with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Now, in your view, are the inaccurate or dishonest statements made in the State of the Union message, specifically vis-a-vis Niger and the attempts to obtain uranium, are those a higher standard? Is the State of the Union message an official speech that, in your view, has a higher standard of culpability should the president use that platform to disseminate false information?
Well, absolutely. First of all, everything the president says publicly is legally and on any level held to a higher standard because people see him as the authority. But the State of the Union, you're absolutely correct, is even a higher standard. standard. And actually, Ari Fleischer just testified in the Scooter Libby case about that very point. He said that the State of the Union was the most important speech that the president makes every single year. And for that very reason, he claimed it's prepared with great care. So you're right. It is seen as kind of the gospel from the president.
And Elizabeth, as you look at the picture, what are the additional counts, the NSA violations of the FISA law, the illegal detention, and the standards under which individuals were detained at Guantanamo? Do you see these as similar bases to develop a count in an indictment?
I do. And let me make it clear in the book, I'm not saying the president should be indicted. What I'm, my purpose is to really make it very clear to people how intentional this deceit was, and in a way that's kind of a non-charged atmosphere so that people aren't just shouting at each other. But you're absolutely right. The conduct of the president has involved so many violations of so many laws that it actually kind of boggles the mind.
Yeah.
The president has essentially admitted violating the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act by conducting wiretapping without going through what's called the FISA court, which is in and of itself a much easier procedure, by the way, than the one that's used for a regular standard search warrant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably your listeners know this. There have been, I think, 19,000 requests to the FISA court over the last 5 years, and only four were denied.
Yeah.
So,
well, and does the Gonzalez flip-flop 2 weeks ago when he went before the Senate Judiciary Committee and said, well, we've found a way to comply with the FISA law, isn't that just a direct admission that they were violating the law in the intervening period?
Well, it's even worse than that. Yes, it's an admission that they were violating the law. It's also additional evidence that during this whole period of time when the administration was making it appear as if they were trying to work, quote-unquote, with Congress and work out all these problems, they were behind the scenes again. And by the way, I think every story about the administration should start with unbeknownst to the American people and Congress. Because unbeknownst to the American people and Congress, they were conducting some sort of secret negotiations with the FISA court, and they had no intention of working this out with Congress. So it's just another example of the administration kind of ducking and weaving whenever they get close to a point where they're actually going to be held to account for anything.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break and continue with Elizabeth de la Vega, formerly an assistant U.S. attorney in the San Jose office and now a private citizen, the author of a new book called U.S. versus George W. Bush et al. And if you have a comment or a question, you can join us in the next segment, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372 is our toll free number. And you're welcome to join us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
The days of wine and roses.
12-step talk uncensored.
Laugh and run away.
Saturdays, 4 to 5 p.m.
Like a child.
12-step talk, uncensored. It's about time.
Through a meadowland toward a closing door.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks?
Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Salt means that our investigation turned up nothing.
Could somebody testify by him before a grand jury? Doesn't mean he's involved.
And it's flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men are three women can rule.
Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you retire, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you've got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. You've got to catapult the propaganda.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant at Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's a Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, asking the question, has 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue become a gangster's paradise?
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left. Cause I've been blasting and laughing so long that even my mama thinks that my mind is gone. But I ain't never crossed a man that didn't deserve it. Me be treated like a punk, you know that's unheard of. You better watch how you're talking and where you're walking, or you and your homies might be lying to chalk. I really hate the trip, but I gotta know. As they grow, I see myself in the pistol smoke. Fool, I'm the kind of G the little homies wanna be like. On my knees in the night, saying prayers in the street light.
We continue with Elizabeth De La Vega, a retired assistant United States attorney who has published a book called U.S. versus George W. Bush et al. And her premise is trying to educate people on the misdeeds of this administration and the need to hold them accountable. And in this hypothetical grand jury proceeding that you depict in the book, where would it lead? Would it lead to criminal indictments, civil cases, or do you feel that this could be the basis for impeachment?
Well, I think that the best model that I can use for this would be what happened in the Watergate era, which is that based on very serious allegations of conduct by Nixon and so forth, actually conduct that was not nearly as serious as these, however, conduct.
I agree.
But anyway, there were hearings held by Senator Ervin, who is kind of a country lawyer, and those hearings led to both articles of impeachment and the appointment of a special prosecutor. We have a different system now for that, but I think that my goal was somewhat modest, even though I did lay out this whole case against the president. My goal is to motivate the public as well as Congress to attend to this matter, to do serious hearings. And I am hopeful that those will be taking place. We do have some Congress people who are starting to do this hearing process about various aspects of the Bush administration's conduct. And without any preconceived idea of where they're going to lead, I think that in order to do it honestly and thoroughly, we can't say what the outcome should be. We can't say impeachment is the goal or it's not the goal.
Well, but in fundamental terms, you wouldn't think that impeachment should be, quote-unquote, off the table, would you?
No, I don't think it should be off the table. And I also think that I understand why Nancy Pelosi would say that, because she's in somewhat of a position of conflict of interest, because if Cheney and Bush were impeached, she would actually be the president.
I think the words
was unfortunate.
I understand that perception, yeah. But at the same time, practically speaking, unless they were, you know, removed together, the process would likely be to take out Cheney first, and then he would be replaced. And
right. And
so Pelosi doesn't have a direct conflict of interest. There is a potential.
Right. No.
And
but
I understand
what I was going to say was that I don't think that the public should let that be the be-all and end-all of it. I think that the public should make its case known and continue to push for what is the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people were discouraged by what she said and kind of wanted to just fade away into nothing, but that's not what the public should do, because one thing the framers of the Constitution talked about in great detail was that actually there's a fourth branch of government, and that is the citizenry.
Mm-hmm.
And so my approach is to basically disregard what Nancy Pelosi said.
Well, and John Nichols, who's written a great book about impeachment, makes the case that they have a responsibility to pursue the issues up to and including impeachment, but at minimum to investigate and identify those who are responsible and who perhaps should be held accountable. And I agree with that interpretation, and therefore I am somewhat offended that Pelosi has said it's off the table. I could see that she might say it's not a high priority.
Right.
You know, if the evidence leads there, we would certainly consider it. There are a lot of different ways that she could phrase it, but I think it's unfortunate that she chose the off-the-table comment.
I do, too, but I'm basically not going to worry about it very much, because I think that it's certainly not something that really has any effect. It's not off the table. The fact of the matter is Congress has a responsibility, as John Nichols said, to do oversight, and oversight has been completely neglected over the past 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
We've had hearings about steroids and just a couple of other things, but nothing that goes to the heart of what's the key problem that we have in this country right now,
mm-hmm.
which is the fraud that led us to this war and that keeps us in this war.
Daniel in Santa Cruz, join us here on the Peter B. Collins Show with Elizabeth De La Vega.
Yes, thank you, Peter. Excellent guest speaker. Elizabeth, I wanted to ask you, what does the Constitution say about who bears responsibility for bringing articles of impeachment and deciding that, as an attorney, you must be aware that there are certain government officials who are responsible for upholding the law. So who's responsible for upholding the Constitution and bringing the president charges of impeachment for the vice president and the president?
Well, actually, it's a process, of course, and it would start in the House, and there would have to be a resolution of impeachment in the House Judiciary Committee, and then that would go to the full House, and they'd have to vote on it. And then if there's a two-thirds majority, then it goes to the Senate for a trial.
It could come from other committees, right? Couldn't it come from government oversight?
It could come from other committees. And there's also a process which, if you go to a website called afterdowningstreet.org, you can look at, that explains how cities and towns can pass resolutions of impeachment that can be presented in the House. Of course, the House doesn't have to act on them, but they still have the effect of making it very clear that people in cities and towns throughout this country feel that there are grounds for impeachment.
Daniel, thanks for a good question. I appreciate that. Elizabeth, just about a minute remaining.
Okay.
Tell me what kind of reaction you've gotten. I didn't see it, but I understand you went on the Colbert Report with the faux Bill O'Reilly. How did that go?
Oh, it was really a lot of fun. I know that he pretends that he doesn't like the book, but he seemed pretty excited about it, actually.
Uh-huh.
And it was great. And actually, his writers did a fantastic job of outlining what the book was about in the word portion that they have on the Colbert Report.
Right. Uh-huh.
So it was excellent.
Okay, and what about your encounter with Ron Owens in San Francisco?
Oh, well, that, you know, Ron says he doesn't want to have lunch with me. So what can I tell you? But I told him I'd be happy to have lunch with him. He seemed a little annoyed, didn't he?
I didn't get to hear it, but it was relayed to me by a third party that you did succeed in annoying him. I'm not sure why. He's a big ego kind of guy.
Yeah, well, he didn't like my book, but he hadn't read it. He told me he hadn't read it. So it's kind of hard to really make judgments about things you haven't read.
Indeed. Well, thank you for your work. Thanks for joining us today. We'll talk again.
Okay, thanks very much.
Elizabeth De La Vega, pick up the book, U.S. versus George W. Bush et al. Coming up next hour, Scott Dick joins us for the full hour. Your calls are welcome. He's our contributor on military and veterans issues. We'll talk about the actual number of troops surging into Iraq and other issues, too. You can join in 888-5-PETER-B. The Peter B. Collins Show, produced by Matt Renner. Visit our website, peterbcollins.com.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A shock in Hollywood, Florida.
At 2:49 this afternoon, we were advised by hospital personnel that Anna Nicole Smith had died.
New government statistics show the rate of autism is on the rise. I'm Howard Arenstein in Washington.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. The sad, troubled life of Anna Nicole Smith ended this afternoon in a hotel room at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. Police Chief Charlie Tiger says a private nurse called for help after Smith collapsed.
Only the nurses in the room at the time.
You said the bodyguard?
We came in at a later time to administer CPR.
Smith was rushed to the hospital where she was pronounced dead. She was 39. It was just 5 months ago that after Smith gave birth to a daughter, her 20-year-old son died in her Bahamas hospital room, an apparent drug overdose. Mark Steinis of Entertainment Tonight broke the story of Anna Nicole Smith's deaths on CBS Radio. He says she was in Florida with her husband, attorney Howard K. Stern, and hadn't been feeling well.
He was concerned about her health, that she had been running a fever. Today they were looking for a boat. They were shopping for a boat for their new place in the Bahamas, that the fever was fluctuating, and the fever had broken eventually, and that she didn't have a fever today. And when the collapse happened, she was then rushed to the hospital and has passed away.
Like my body. Then get dieting, exercising, and TrimSpa X32.
Smith's weight fluctuated wildly. She was a spokeswoman for TrimSpa, which she credited with helping her shed 70 pounds. More on her story from CBS News correspondent Drew Levinson.
Anna Nicole Smith had been a topless dancer and made her name as a model for Guess jeans. She was Playboy's Playmate of the Year in 1993. A year later, she married 89-year-old oil tycoon J. Howard Marshall. His death in 1995 sparked a feud over his fortune with Marshall's son. The California Supreme Court awarded $474 million to Smith, but it was overturned. But recently, the Supreme Court revived the case.
Smith always insisted her relationship with a man more than 60 years her senior was real.
I've never had the love that this man gave me, and I'll never have it again. And I'll never, never know about true love again, ever.
Most recently, she was embroiled in a fight over the paternity of her newborn daughter. Now this.
This Valentine's Day, send your sweetheart the gift that shines above all others. Name a star after them. I'm Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we will name a star after your sweetheart and send a beautiful gift package. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com for this year's hottest Valentine's Day gift.
Wouldn't it feel great if just once someone said to you, hey, you know what I noticed? You're a really good driver. But no one does. They take your impressive skills for granted. Well, Progressive will tell you. They're willing to say, yes, you are a good driver, and we're giving you a special rate, a special lower rate. You could save over $400 when you switch, just for being a good driver.
Good driver savings from Progressive. Switch today at Progressive.com. Progressive. It's about you, and it's about time.
Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Available everywhere but Massachusetts. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The numbers are startling. A new report from federal health officials says autism among American kids is far more common than previously believed. CBS News correspondent Howard Arenstein reports.
Kathy Rice of the Centers for Disease Control says rates differ by location.
From 4.5 per thousand in West Virginia to 9.9 per thousand in New Jersey.
And Portia Iverson, who has an autistic son, says the environment may be a factor.
We do know genes are involved, so apparently there must be some environmental components that are interacting with those genes.
Whatever the cause, autism expert Melissa Nishawala says there is help.
We know that there's lots of things that we can do to intervene to make children's learning better and to make their childhood happier.
For one in 150 kids. Howard Arenstein, CBS News, Washington.
With the buildup of U.S. forces in the Persian Gulf, an Iranian naval commander said today they've test-fired missiles that could sink big warships. And Iran's supreme leader warned against a preemptive strike on his country's nuclear facilities. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller has the latest from the White House.
In response to threats of retaliation from Iran's leader should the U.S. attack his country, White House spokesman Tony Snow says that's not the game plan.
Let's see, I've said it, Secretary of Defense has said it, the President has said it. We're not invading Iran, so I think this is, you know, he's spinning a hypothetical about something that is not contemplated.
Even so, hardly a day goes by when the U.S. government does not warn Iran about staying out of Iraq and ending its nuclear weapons program. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Tiger Balm presents football superstar Jerry Rice.
Foxtrot.
I can't believe I'm dancing with Jerry Rice.
I can't believe dancing is as hard as playing wide receiver.
Tango.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You okay?
Yeah. How do you manage all the aches and pain?
Tiger Balm.
Really?
Tiger Balm works fast and lasts a long time.
Samba.
Whoa. Oh, sorry. I'm such a klutz.
Maybe we should stop.
No, just get me some Tiger Balm.
You sure?
Just give me the Tiger Balm.
If you suffer from aches and pains, go for the balm. Tiger Balm. Now in a convenient, easy-to-apply patch. At drugstores, mass discount stores, supermarkets, and health food stores everywhere.
Hello, would you like to be more successful with the opposite sex? I'm Ted Baker, and my program can teach you how to attract a mate. Listen to this.
Ted told me about logging on to freecreditreport.com. I learned that my good credit could help me buy a car and a boat, and now chicks dig me.
My patented system could work for you, too. Log on to freecreditreport.com to get your free credit score and report. A nice condo could make you irresistible.
Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage.
Launch another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. This hour we visit with Scott Dick. He's our contributor on military and veterans affairs. He served in the Marines, retired from the Army as a major, and he decodes acronyms and explains things to civilians like me. 7 minutes after the hour, and Scott Digg joins us now. And you're welcome to call in if you have a comment related to our conversation this hour. 888-5-PETER-B is the toll-free number. That's 888-573-8372. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Peter. How are you?
Not bad. I had a nice little vacation, and it's nice to be back in the groove. And, boy, there's so much to talk about.
There is indeed.
If time permits this hour, I want to cover the actual count of new bodies or increased bodies in Iraq under the Bush surge plan. We call it escalation. Also want to talk about the hearing yesterday that focused on the contractors or mercenaries, as some of them are, who are serving in Iraq at very high cost to the American taxpayer. I want to talk about the mistrial in the Ouattara court-martial, confirmation of General Casey, why the copters are falling out of the sky in Iraq. And if there's time, we'll talk about Nancy Pelosi and the non-existent controversy over what kind of a military jet they will assign her for occasional travel. Let's start off with the situation in Iraq, Scott. This week, because the debate was stalled in the Senate, we didn't really get to air things out the way I think many people had hoped. But in the course of that debate, it was interesting because Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, the Democrat, was using the number 48,000 to describe the actual count of the increased deployment or the retained deployment, a combination of those two, of American troops in Iraq. And Gates, the new defense secretary, was on the Hill as well in separate encounters. And he said that, yeah, it's more than 21,500, but it's probably around 25,000. Now, you have told us many times over the course of the past year and a half or so that for each guy carrying a gun or gal, each armed service member, there are 3 to 5 support troops involved. Is that the right number?
Well, we discussed that with Joe Galloway too, and what I've seen it as large as 6 when you carry it all the way back to theater support. But actually deploying, yeah, 3 or 4 is about right. So that's why I was saying, Peter, that if you deploy 21,000, you're only going to get a third of those, maybe as few as a fourth, that are actually going to go out and patrol and get blown up and shoot people and kick in doors.
But was the president using sleight of hand in the number that he told us? In other words, is 21,000 the number of combat troops, and are they expecting through a combination of contractors and support troops to increase that deployment somewhere close to the number that Reid is using, the 48,000?
Yeah, they just used weasel math, and the problem is exactly right. If you, I mean, think of it, let's use the easiest thing for people to understand. Those 21,000 troops have to have, for example, 21,000 cots to sleep in at night. So just moving cots, it is going to take a lot more people than are there right now, because their people aren't in the business of moving cots. I mean, it sounds like a silly thing, but also takes 7 pounds of ice per person per day. So it's going to take the truck drivers and the food handlers and all of those additional people that aren't handling that capacity now to increase that. And I don't think there's that much excess capacity in Iraq that they can suddenly, oh, yeah, we can handle 21,000 more cots, or, you know, multiply 7 pounds times 21,000. Those are tractor trailer after tractor trailer after tractor trailer, and that's just ice, and that's just a place to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about everything else, either we're not getting the bullet launchers that they're saying that we're going to get, or we're getting a huge number of 48,000, and it's DOD's own, Department of Defense's own fault that there's this kind of controversy over the numbers.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it is kind of hard to get a handle on it at this point, because it does appear that the Bush administration is not trying to tell us the truth. There is some obfuscation going on there. And separately, there was a hearing yesterday, I believe it was in front of Congressman Waxman's Government Oversight Committee, that followed up on the Bremer testimony the day before and took a look at the contractors in Iraq, particularly those who've gotten deals since the occupation began. And it's a fascinating look. This follows a Sunday front page article on the New York Times about the incredible expansion of the use of these contractors, not only at the Pentagon, but in many other cabinet-level departments in the U.S. government since Bush took office, but focused specifically on Iraq. Is there the possibility that the support staff required for these additional 21,500 troops will come entirely from contractors?
Well, sure, and that's where the majority of the support staff now is coming from, contractors. Never have there this many contractors been in the field. And, Peter, we've been using contractors since the Revolutionary War, and I'm not just talking about mercenaries, although we hired them too. We've had, I think there was something like 4,000 or 5,000, maybe 50,000 in Vietnam at the height of the contractor power. They provide jet maintenance and that kind of thing. But to the level that we've replaced troops with contractors is unprecedented. And Peter, I don't know if you're aware of the, or your listeners are aware, that there is a lawsuit going on right now against Blackwater because they've basically left their contractors out there with their butts hanging out, without heavy equipment, without the heavy weapons they were promised, without the staff that they were promised.
Some of the survivors testified, and they described the very situation that you said, that these individuals who were hired and offered, you know, pretty impressive salaries, $100,000 to $125,000 a year to be a truck driver, they were told that they'd never be alone, that there'd always be at least three people on a truck, that the trucks would always be in convoys. I mean, there was a whole series of policies and promises made as these individuals were hired that were not honored when they actually got into the field.
Well, Peter, just to make a split of hair here, these are not the truck drivers. These are the gun trucks that were providing support.
Mm.
And I want everybody to just, I want to just humanize this for a minute. Those contractors had names, and all four of them were out of the military. They were all young men who had gotten out of the SEALs and out of the Army. There were two Rangers and a SEAL and somebody else I can't think of right. So those are still American young men that were killed, and we put the contractor label on them, and then it makes it easy for us. One, the Pentagon doesn't have to count their deaths against their death toll. Two, you know, it's Halliburton's problem,
mm-hmm.
because, the Halliburton's been fined $18.5 million by the DOD for subcontracting for security through Blackwell when they are prohibited in the contract from doing that.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I have the article in front of me, and not to split hairs, but it's $19.6 million. And this came out during the Oversight Committee hearing yesterday. The Army is withholding that $19.6 million from Halliburton after discovering that they violated their contract by hiring Blackwater USA to provide armed security guards in Iraq. And is this a kind of double dipping or cost plus situation, where instead of having their own security details, Halliburton was spending money with Blackwater and then marking that up and billing it to the government?
Of course, and it's a matter of a lot of people at the top getting rich, both at Blackwater and at Halliburton. And so the people that suffer are the troops on the ground and the private security contractors on the ground who are occupying those gun trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame. And, $19 million, that's a gnat's buzz for these guys.
Sure, it's a roll of quarters to Halliburton.
Exactly. And to Blackwell, too, if they get punished somehow. But, it helps Blackwell because they have a contract to provide security, so they can twist that into more business development, where they go and say, look, we got this contract, we're going to be there, for a few million bucks, we can provide security for this. I mean, I've seen that, that's how it works.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and resume with Scott Dick. We've got lots to talk about, and you're welcome to join us on the telephone this hour, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We're talking about... talking about the 51st state of occupied Iraq and other military veterans issues. 888-5-PETER-B puts you through to the Peter B. Collins Show. ARXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
This week on Rockrilla Real Estate, find out what it's like to own property on the south of France or Spain and other great European countries. Meet the folks of MRI Overseas Property. Scott Neff, International Marketing Director of McAnthony Realty, will share his knowledge of what it takes to buy real estate overseas. Rockrilla Real Estate, your number one source for all your real estate needs, every Sunday morning at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too.
a side of couscous and a Baba Ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Frank Sullivan with traffic on KRXA 540. It's that time of the year again, of course, time for Pebble Beach, and that is going to result in quite a few delays, not only today, but through Sunday. In fact, it is likely to get worse on the weekends. Expect delays on Highway 1, the 17-mile drive, of course, is going to be absolutely jammed, and you're going to see some slowing heading into Pebble Beach and Pacific Grove and Carmel, so do be aware of that. San Juan Bautista, we have a more pressing problem. San Justo Road to Prescott Road, possible fallen power cables on the roadway. The CHP is on scene. Those are down in the westbound lane. And that were brought to you by JCPenney. Guys, Valentine's Day, go to the jewelry store at JCPenney. 60% off through February 14th. JCPenney. I'm Frank Sullivan with traffic on KRXA 540.
The Peter B. Collins Show.
Those who start wars never fight them. Those who fight wars, they never like them. Those who write laws, they can't recite them. Just fight laws, we live and die them. But I know they're never gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies. It's time, it's time to go home.
21 minutes after the hour, the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm Peter B. along with Scott Dick, our contributor on military and veterans issues. Scott, when you were serving and debates took place in the Senate or the House or just in public in the United States about, say, for example, our deployment in Bosnia, where you were, did that debate undermine the commitment of the troops to the mission? Did it injure them in any way?
And that makes me laugh, Peter. Most of these guys are combat armed soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And watching the TV and listening to Congress people yell back and forth at each other, no. It's the only time it ever affected me personally was when I was in a room full of officers, and we just heard the Dayton was going to be, the Dayton Accord was going to be signed.
Yeah.
And so they flipped the channel in the chief of staff's office over to CNN, and there was the hearing going on. It was being publicized on maybe C-SPAN or something, I don't know. And there were the three of Clinton's administration, all three telling the lie that this is going to be a one-year deployment. And we're all standing in the room, all of us, muttering to ourselves, that is a you-know-what lie.
And so if you could put yourself in the boots of troops who are on the ground in Iraq, and, you know, they'd probably have the same access to satellite television or TiVo delayed programs. If they were to watch the non-debate, the skirmish in the Senate this week to avoid debating the issues of Iraq, would it undermine their commitment? Would it make them feel that the public doesn't support the troops?
First of all, I just want to say, unless I'm completely crazy, that everybody, the only people that really have access to that kind of programming are the ones that are in the green zone, probably lieutenants and above and some kind of headquarters staff. The grunts, they get AFN in a big screen, probably in a tent somewhere, and they're not going to flip it off of whatever the local sports or happy programming is. And when a guy goes out and a gal goes out and they put a round in the chamber of the M16 as they're going out on patrol or the escort in a convoy or they're taking VIPs around, they could give a damn what they just saw on the television an hour before. They have bigger things to worry about.
So as you have watched, presumably, the proceedings this week, we have a Warner resolution, which is a watered-down repudiation of the president's plan to escalate U.S. Deployment there. We have the McCain Amendment, or resolution, which is intended to support the president's escalation. And then there is at least one other, which is in contention, the Judd Gregg resolution, which is a red herring or kryptonite, whatever you want to call it. But it's intended to shame Democrats into voting to pledge not to cut off funding for the war and the troops who are deployed. What's your take on all that?
Well, you know, all of that is fine and dandy, and the resolutions, they're going to go, they're going to be passed or not passed, and people are going to fight on all, you know, they're going to fight. And I think the troops and the commanders that have been asking for more troops for 3 years might, they have really two ways of thinking. No, it's about time, and are we going to get those troops, and what are we going to do with them, because we don't have a mission. So it's, I could see where they would have this sort of bipolar attitude towards the troop, the resolutions. Are they going to send us more troops? Are they not going to send us more troops? Are they going to be trained? Are they going to be, you know, what's happening here? But, Peter, who has cut off funds for the war in Iraq?
Nobody.
Yes, they have.
Oh, who?
Did Bush send up a $170 billion budget request for this year and $100 billion, and then he sent in that trillion-dollar thing, that scam book? Did you know that there's no funding for the war in Iraq or Afghanistan for 09?
No, I didn't know that.
They're playing budget miracles. We're going to have a fantastic...
Oh, so that's how we cut the deficit in half.
By 2012.
Uh-huh.
Yes, there's no funding for 09.
I didn't know that.
And there's some, it's sort of at a more specialized level that people are talking about it, but the spokesman for the budget, the White House budget office said, yeah, you know, it's zero, that doesn't mean anything. It means a lot, because the numbers are staggering for this war, and it goes to 08, and then there's nothing for 09, and then that's how they're going to balance the budget by 2012.
Well, thanks for bringing that to my attention. I have to tell you, frankly, I glaze over when they issue these budget documents, because you know, the budget that will actually come out of the Congress and be signed by the president sometime late this year is going to barely resemble what's been proposed. And so I often wait until they really are debating and figuring out how much money to spend on what to focus on those things. So thanks for letting me know that. Dave joins us from Eureka. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter, Major. It strikes me that holding Halliburton accountable for anything flies in the face of what this administration is all about. That is to say, this one of many no-bid contractors that has been overcharging the Treasury like crazy, misplacing billions of dollars, getting nothing but bonuses. What happened? Did they plop down some honest inspector general, and how would he fit in? And has he been taken out and flogged yet?
You want to take that, Scott?
Well, I say, yeah, obviously he's not a U.S. attorney.
Yeah.
No, the deal is that bureaucracies can be sinkholes of non-action. And so if you have a bureaucracy that is afraid of its own shadow because they're getting no support from Congress in the case of before last November elections, and now they're going to start creeping more and more and more. They're hardworking people that know they might send all the reports they need to the Republican-led Congress, and if those get filed in the bottom drawer where all of the other reports about Mark Foley got filed, then nothing's going to happen. Who's going to take it anywhere? It's going to go and bosses that are political appointees or cronies of George Bush are going to say, yes, though. So they sent tainted water to our troops. Did anybody die? No. Well, then shut up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and unfortunately, we commented on this yesterday with Phyllis Bennis. The way the Waxman Committee has opened this up is interesting because, you know, the Paul Bremer admitted mistakes and they talked about the $12 billion in cash that was flown over and not accounted for. But at the end of the day, it was like, oh, that was interesting. Next. And I'd like to see some teeth put into that and some follow-through. Hopefully that will occur, but we haven't seen the signs of it yet. Scott, we'll continue after a break. Stay with us. And if you'd like to talk with Scott Dick and me, call us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
The Pod People, under attack. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Senator Carl Krueger, a member of the New York legislature, is proposing a law that would make it illegal to listen to your iPod while crossing the street because it's dangerous.
You're going to be given a summons, you're going to have to appear in criminal court, and you're going to have to pay a $110 fine, and hopefully a reprimand from a judge will send a very clear message to you.
Whoa, 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 chill there, Senator. Have a Snickers. As I see it, wearing an iPod in the crosswalk is self-limiting behavior. Over time, people who can't handle it will tend to, you know, sort of disappear. If you pass a law like this, where does it stop? What happened to freedom, Senator? You were literally asking people to interrupt the soundtrack of their lives. Normally, this is what the world sounds like when you're crossing the street with an iPod. Huh? Oh, yeah. Life is good. You are a master of your domain. Everything's right with whatever world you're in. The important thing is, it's a world of your own choosing. But now, if you're going to be forced by law to remove the earbuds in the crosswalk, well,
get a clue, you moron!
You see, the effect is ruin. Therefore, you iPod people need to take to the streets now and oppose this law. You need to stand up and, I say, iPod people should take to the streets now and oppose this assault on your... Forget it.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. When you call 1-800-989-4200, you get a real person within seconds, not a 5-minute menu of buttons to push. Here's another old-fashioned idea. My 8-pound Orrick XL vacuums are built to last long after you've thrown the other brands away. Call 1-800-989-4200. I'll send you one to try risk-free for 30 days. Of course, if you'd rather talk to a machine, you can always call someone else.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Show continues. It's a rainy Thursday on the left coast.
It was a filthy block of flats. Trash was on the floor. A snake was in my nose. The hinges off the door. She took me in her room. I was big and span. Fixed me up a drink.
I don't understand any of these lyrics, but then he says the rain fell down. That works. We continue our weekly visit with Scott Dick, talking about military and veterans issues. And Scott, on the veterans front, our friend Carl in Fortuna up near Eureka forwarded me a press release from the Vietnam Vets of America regarding funding for the VA. And the Vietnam Vets have proposed that we need about a $7 billion increase in fiscal year 2007 just to really catch up and to deal with the new wave of returning injured vets and what is projected to be a huge population of individuals suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And the Bush administration, in the budget you cited a minute ago, has proposed only about $2 billion in increased spending at the VA.
Peter, the VA, sorry to interrupt, but the VA has already had to shift money from their construction and maintenance budget over to treatment because they're underfunded in the treatment side. And there's a celebrated case going on right now of a ex-Marine who was an Iraqi vet who committed suicide. He tried 3 days, over a three-day period with his family, including driving to two separate VA hospitals to be admitted because he was having suicidal thoughts, and they kept saying no tomorrow, and then they said, we can't see you for a month, and some I won't use the word on the radio, some person told him it would be March. And he was maintaining at home a couple of days, and then he hung himself.
Oh.
And it's kind of stuff that the neocons and the Bush Republicans are talking about, support the troops, then they need to support the troops, not the, I'm not even going to go there because I'm just going to blow up. Sorry, Peter.
Yeah, I understand. All right, turning to another news item that has just broken today in Hanford at the Camp Pendleton Marine Base. 22-year-old Corporal Roel Ryan Briones has changed his plea. He had pled guilty to a murder charge, and he has changed his plea now, and the judge has permitted him to do so. He was involved in the attack in Haditha in 2005. And so that's an interesting development there, because I guess he thought that he was kind of cornered. And now he has changed his plea and said that what he did was consistent with the orders he was given.
Wow. If he can prove that, and in this case, he's going to have to prove it, even though you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. He's going to have to prove that, or they're going to put him away for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Because when the Marine Corps, when the Naval Services start to sweep in the justice broom, they sweep everybody up into it.
Now, speaking of the military justice system, yesterday at Fort Lewis, Washington, a mistrial was declared in the court-martial of Army Lieutenant Aaron Watada. And we had a chance to speak with the lieutenant just about 2 weeks ago when I was in Washington. And I'm very impressed with the guy. I consider him to be quite sincere. And he has a moral basis for his objection to accepting the order to deploy to Iraq. What's your reaction to that, Scott?
I've been following this case and reading a lot of verbiage about it, and this is fascinating for me because he said he would go to Afghanistan. No worries there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really dug in his heels. And, I thought he was going to be court-martialed because the military justice system, once it starts to roll, really just crushes everything underneath it. And in the bad old days, used to be something called command influence, where the commanding general would call on the judge and say, "Now, you're not really going to let this guy go free, are you?" After a couple of celebrated lawsuits and some rulings by the Military Court of Appeals, that's supposed to be all hush-hush. But let me tell you, somebody's been talking to that judge. Now it blows up in their faces. And it looks like, from the analysis, that they're not going to be able to retry him on it.
It does appear that way. The way it occurred, and if you go to truthout.org, there's a great interview by Jeff Millard, who's an Iraqi vet who works for Truth Out, and Eric Seitz, the attorney who has represented Lieutenant Watada. And it's interesting because the defense, the Watada team, did not want a mistrial. And this stipulation that was signed was an attempt to avoid dragging these journalists in to testify to simply corroborate that Watada said the things he said. So he acknowledged that he said the things that are on the videotapes and in the news articles that would be introduced in evidence at this court-martial. And then that was interpreted as an admission of guilt by the prosecution. And at that point, the judge called a mistrial, and since the defense didn't ask for it, it means that, in general, the charges should be dismissed with prejudice, which means that they cannot be brought back under the double jeopardy rules for an additional trial.
Now, two things can happen, Peter, as far as I'm concerned. The Army may let him resign, which means he leaves the service. And I don't know, I don't know where he's commissioned, if he went to West Point or whatever. That would be a good thing for him. The other thing is they may not let him resign, and they may just put him back on orders to Iraq again. Only this time they'll get their ducks in a row. And we'll go through this again, and it will be a separate charge based on a separate failure to appear.
Now, we got an interesting comment yesterday from Daryl Anderson. He served in Iraq, and then when he was supposed to report for deployment for a second tour, he bolted for Canada. And he had won a Purple Heart on his first tour in Iraq and, by all accounts, performed in an exemplary manner. But he decided that he had been participating in what he considered to be war crimes, and he did not want to continue in that vein. So he went to Canada, and then he returned and went to Fort Knox, where they did not court-martial him. They just drummed him out of the service. I don't know what type of discharge they gave him. I don't think it was dishonorable from what he indicated yesterday.
I don't think you can. I think based on his being a deserter, it was probably other than honorable, which if he's careful and he puts his paperwork, has his paperwork in order, I think it's 6 years, it can be converted to honorable.
Well, what he said was that the people at Fort Knox were not willing to put him through a court-martial because they thought that it might kind of spread the virus of refusing to serve to other people on that base.
Which is, you'd think they'd want to make an example out of him, but the problem is it creates more press and more public outcry, and more people become involved. And it is. It's a virus not only of the troops, but of the citizenry. There's some fundamental issues that people need to get a clue with or get a grasp of. If you have a vet who's not just dying to go back and finish the mission and, bring democracy to the Iraqi people. Do you understand what I'm saying, Peter?
I do.
maybe that's not what's happening there. Maybe what people are saying that is happening there is really happening there, and he'd want to go back, and he'd rather go to prison than go there.
Right. Let's talk to Leonard in Glendale, who served in Iraq. Hello, Leonard. You're on the air with Peter B. and Scott Dick.
Thank you, gentlemen. What an honor to speak with you. Hey, I just wanted to say, I didn't realize I'd be talking so quick on the subject, but I was reading a Veterans for Peace email newsletter kind of thing that I get through the Veterans for Peace Phoenix chapter on this whole Lieutenant Watada thing, and it was a great article going back how in the 70s soldiers in the American Army had tried to go through the courts, but the legal jurisprudence system had copped out and continues to cop out. And basically when soldiers are saying, wait, even in the Army manual, I think Lieutenant Watada was stating, it does state that we must follow our treaties, and we're in clear violation of treaties and international law. the American government, that is, because the United Nations did not give us permission to do this, as the Bush claims. And also, no war, formal war, was declared. That power still is Congress. So it's a great article, and I think that we're in danger. I think this is a great victory for Lieutenant Watada, you know, because it doesn't, the Nuremberg defense, you know, they basically want our soldiers to knuckle under and do anything they're told, because they say, well, we can command, what, responsibility, whatever. So I wanted to bring that up. And also yesterday I saw an Army recruiter out here. I'm at a bus stop right now. And, he was apparently talking to a young individual, kind of scruffy looking fella, or a high school kid. You know, and I'm just thinking, is this to the point where we're getting to the point now, they're so desperate they're going to bus stops. So I really, it sickens me. You know, I respect my fellow soldiers, but the recruiters and these other people now, you know, they know what they're doing, and it's not right to be sending our men to Iraq for a lie, and that's what it is. So anyways, thank you, and I'll continue listening. And thanks again. I believe you were a major, sir. Yes. Is that what you were?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for contributing your experience on the logistics. I know firsthand by watching these contractors go out of the wire with no helmets, driving in the back of trucks. I couldn't believe it, and it was bad enough we had to go out in Humvees that were armored. So thank you.
All right.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Leonard, thank you. The other thing about the contractors in Iraq, which was pointed out on the NewsHour's coverage of the hearing yesterday before the Waxman Government Oversight Committee, Scott, was that they have complete impunity and immunity. They, and in fact, there have been situations where mercenary contractors from, say, Blackwater came up against mercenary contractors from, say, CACI, C-A-C-I, and they can fire on one another, and if, you know, something happens and they kill each other, or you know, those kinds of things develop, the shooter cannot be held responsible. Well, under the decree left behind by Paul Bremer, the guy who ran the Coalition Provisional Authority, the occupation, the contractors are immune from action by the United States or by the government of Iraq.
And now they just passed something that included contractors, and it's way overkill. But the specific case that brought this to people's attention was an assistant manager or a regional manager at Blackwater who the last day in country got together a couple of trucks because he wanted to go out and shoot somebody.
Yeah.
And he did.
Yeah.
And they testified under sworn oath that that's what he did, and there's nothing that anybody's going to do to him. And he did shoot somebody. Peter, I wish, you know, the war has taken an ominous turn, and we're talking about the helicopters. You mentioned that in the opening.
Mm-hmm.
It's
we've lost six, I believe, one Blackwater and five military choppers in the last 14 to 21 days.
Now, this tells me that the Air Defense Artillery School is out. In other words, their first graduating class is now on the streets of Baghdad.
And explain that.
Well, you can't, if I put a Stinger missile, for example, in front of you, Peter, and opened up the box it comes in and said, okay, go shoot a helicopter, you would just look at me like I was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That even the Russian SA-7s or SA-16s or 17s that are shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles,
they
take training. And in our own military, at least when I was in, Stinger gunners, they had a competition to see who the best Stinger gunner was to let him fire a live one. They go down to Cyprus, they have a range down there.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a lot of work. You know, the winner, that's how hard they are to fire. It takes a lot of work to learn how to fire these things and to maintain them, and there's a certain way to do it. And so what this tells me is somebody took a bunch, and you can't do it on the streets of Baghdad while you're dodging bullets.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody took a group someplace else, trained them how to use the missiles, gave them a truckload, and said, now, do your job. And they're doing it.
And if you had to guess, would it be Iran? Because we do know that Muqtada al-Sadr's militia, the Mahdi Army, has had some of its troops receive training in Iran.
Well, some of that $9 billion that went missing from the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
is paying somebody. It's paying the Russians, it's paying the Syrians, it's paying the Iranians. It's paying somebody to conduct these classes. Not only that, but snipers, Iraqi snipers, are now hitting targets between their helmets and their vests. Now, that's a level of expertise that also somebody took the snipers out and are training them, and these guys are good.
Very good point. We'll continue in a moment. Scott Dick with me here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines open if you'd like to talk with us at 888-5-PETER-B. And the Free Speech Zone. It's wall-to-wall phone calls next hour here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
The Billy Sunshine Show.
Billy Sunshine Show.
With P-Lar. With P-Lar.
Sunday at 3 o'clock, we're going to be doing something new, something different, or we'll do the same old thing. Take your phone calls. One thing we know for sure, I'll have something to say. What? I don't know. I never know until I've said it. Find out what's the next thing to come out of my mouth.
The Billy Sunshine Show with P-Lar.
Sundays from 3 to 5. 3 to 5.
On AM 540. KRXA.
And good afternoon. I'm Frank Sullivan on KRXA 540. We're going to take a look at traffic in a couple of locations, and we're going to begin in Santa Cruz Highway 9 and Encinal Road Construction. One-way traffic control in effect Mondays through Thursdays, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Up to 15-minute delays have been reported. And some construction on Highway 1, the southbound ramp over to Morrissey Boulevard. Road construction 24 hours a day through May. And again, Pebble Beach is on, so expect delays this weekend in particular on Highway 1 and even back to 17. That we're brought to by JCPenney. It's the JCPenney Super Saturday Sale. This Saturday only, get great doorbuster deals from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. JCPenney, see store for details. I'm Frank Sullivan with traffic on 540 AM KRXA.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. And I don't want to alarm our listeners in Phoenix, but I will. The Phoenix light phenomenon has returned to the night sky over downtown Phoenix. Tuesday night, mysterious lights lit up the western skies over Phoenix, and soon after, phones began ringing off the hook at radio, TV, and police stations from witnesses wondering what the lights were. Turns out they were amber-colored flares from the Yuma Marine Base. That's a relief. Scott Dick's with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll go back to the phones here in just a second. But, Scott, I wanted to get your thoughts on this non-controversy over the DOD, the Defense Department plane, to be assigned for the occasional use of the new speaker, Nancy Pelosi. Now, in the past, Dennis Hastert, who was the Republican speaker, used a military jet to fly from Washington to his home base in the suburban Chicago area. And now that Pelosi is speaker, for security reasons and others, she has the option to use military aircraft. And her associates, I guess the sergeant-at-arms of the House, has been inquiring over at the Pentagon exactly what jets are available and what should be used. And one of the issues news is that she probably wants a jet that doesn't have to stop for refueling on the 4.5-5-hour flight from Washington to San Francisco. It's a good bit further than the distance that Dennis Hastert was flying from D.C. to Chicago. What's going on here? Is this just another gotcha game by the Republicans?
This is the group of people who brought us Travelgate because the White House fired one person that did travel. And remember the big stink they made over it?
Oh, yeah.
So here we have, first of all, let's get this straight. The Sergeant of Arms is head of security for Congress.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a ceremonial post. And he's the one that brought it to our attention, said, as the third in the line, you're entitled to military aircraft, because after 9/11, Hastert did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the good thing is, Peter, I can fly on military jet aircraft, me, myself and I, because I'm a retiree. And Congress forced the military to buy, I think, a fleet of 37 Lear and Gulfstream jets.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a Gulfstream 4 we're talking about. Now, when it says assign, it doesn't mean assign like, oh, she's got a jet they're going to paint in a Pelosi under the front window like to do the pilot's name.
Right.
It's a rotation jet that's made available to the speaker. They still have to coordinate it. They still have to say, do you have a jet for us? We're going to go back to wherever. And the Air Force puts it up. I mean, they have a whole system built at any one time in the U.S. There are hundreds of these flights around the United States. And as a retiree, if I happen to be at the right place at the right time, say I want to go from D.C. to New York, I just look on the chart and see there's a flight and present myself with my ID card. And if there's available space, they'll put me on the airplane.
Right.
So adding it to the speaker and saying that the Post and Lou Dobbs both lied. She did not ask for a 757. She did not ask for any of that thing. It was a sergeant at arms from Congress who brought that up to her, and it's a Gulfstream 4. And if they just the Gulfstream has a jet that'll fly the distance without having to refuel, and you know probably Air Force will sign her that aircraft once they have to stop in, you know, Manhattan, Kansas to get gas.
Well, the other thing is that Congress just passed a ban on corporate jet travel by members, and I think that's a wise ban. I also think that it makes sense, particularly for top officials, for both security reasons and, you know, simply to make it convenient for them so that they don't spend, you know, hours on end at the airport going through security and all that hoopla, you know, just to accept that this is a cost the taxpayers are going to pick up one way or the other.
Those aircraft, Peter, are sitting on taxiways all over the United States at Air Force bases already. A lot of them are underused because the Congress forced them to buy them in the 90s and the 80s. They're top-of-line jets with wood paneling. They're corporate travel jets. They have the United States of America painted on the side. We have 727s and DC-9s that do more than just haul, you know, litter patients and that kind of thing. There's a whole corporate jet fleet inside the United States Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of this is a bunch of crap.
Well, thank you for putting it in plain English. Now John joins us from Carmel Valley. Hello, John.
Last I heard, Nancy Pelosi gave in.
Oh, really?
Yep.
What happened?
Let me not distract us. I got other things to say.
Well, just give us. You teased us.
Later.
Okay, but you just teased us, John. What did she say? She doesn't want one of those jets?
She just. It was on Ed Schultz's program. He discussed it in considerable mm-hmm. length, and I heard some of the CBS News then, and it was. It sounded, at least what I heard, she was just. Essentially, she thought it would just, you know, be a big distraction, mm-hmm. and she did not want to appear that she was, I think she wants this whole Congress to look as frugal and un-Bush-like as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And if
okay.
there's even a hint, even if it's all concocted and wrong, she's more inclined to take evasive action.
Okay, but thanks for that, and that's not why you called, so go ahead.
That's not. I heard Tom Hartman most of his show today, and he had a number of right-wing callers using the old argument about weapons of mass destruction, and he spent a lot of time very effectively pointing out how Bush had no other agenda to deal with, assuming they were even there, but as he pointed out, it turned out that they weren't. And the Blix whole when those UN inspectors were there, were doing an effective job and essentially did not want Bush to stop, to engage in a war and end their efforts to try to deal with it without all-out war. And this preemptive strike doctrine, it should be in different words. Instead of preemptive strike, it should simply be preemptive war, because that's essentially what it involves. And Bush is just simply the warmonger's warmonger. I would like to say more, but in my waiting to get on the air, I thought of a question for Scott, and I'd rather not argue this anymore.
Right.
I'd love to, but I want to ask him a question, and I'd much rather hear him talk on this.
All right, make it quick. The clock's
okay,
running.
What would he have done if he had been Bush to deal militarily, or would he have dealt militarily with the whole terrorist issue immediately following 9/11? What would he have done?
I would have sent the 82nd Airborne, actually the 18th Airborne Corps into Afghanistan, and I would have sealed the border between Pakistan and Afghanistan. That's his only safe route. And I wouldn't have dinked around with the way he dinked around with it. And I would have let the generals, the Special Forces generals, and the 18th Airborne Commander, who's a Corps commander, there's multiple divisions, and let him and CENTCOM commander deal with it.
But where would you have gone militarily? Into Afghanistan after bin Laden? I'm not following what area you're talking about.
Wait, what's the confusion? Afghanistan is where I would have gone.
Okay, that's what I meant. You meant you would have gone into Afghanistan. I just wasn't following where you had in mind to go.
All right, John, thanks. We're out of time. Scott, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
It's always a pleasure, Peter.
Scott Dick here on the Peter B. Collins Show. The Free Speech Zone is next. Grab a line, and let's talk about any issue from any viewpoint from anywhere within the sound of my voice. 1-888-5-PETER-B.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Tabloid fodder for more than a decade, former playmate and would-be heiress Anna Nicole Smith died suddenly this afternoon. She collapsed in a room at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood, Florida. An autopsy will determine the cause. She was 39. CBS News correspondent Kelly Kobiea has her story.
Anna Nicole Smith was born Vicki Lynn Hogan in Houston, a former stripper who made a name for herself as a sultry Marilyn Monroe lookalike, posing for Playboy and selling Guess jeans. But it was her marriage to Texas oil mogul J. Howard Marshall that took her onto a different stage. She was 26 at the time. He was 89. After his death, she fought for an inheritance worth billions, all the way to the Supreme Court.
That case is still pending. Last year, Smith's 20-year-old son died of an apparent drug overdose just days after she'd given birth to a daughter. That child's paternity is in dispute. Many more American children have autism than previously believed. That report today from the Centers for Disease Control. CBS News medical correspondent Dr. Jonathan LaPook has details.
CDC researchers determined as many as 1 in 150 children have the disorder. Previous studies have estimated the rate with 1 in 166 children.
That there are large numbers of children now in this country with autism.
The CDC makes no judgments about whether autism rates are increasing.
What we're doing in these numbers is just establishing the amount of children out there, the number of families that are seeking services.
The study sheds light on a huge problem. children are being diagnosed too late.
An autism advocates group says government needs to provide more early intervention and more therapists. In Pima County, Arizona, near the Mexican border, authorities say gunmen ambushed a pickup loaded with illegal immigrants, shot some, and took the others captive. One of the victims died, and some of the immigrants are still missing. The prosecution rested today at the trial of Vice President Cheney's former chief of staff. Scooter Libby is charged with lying and obstructing the investigation into the leak of a CIA officer's identity. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cullen is following the trial.
The prosecution's case always looks strongest at this juncture, just before the first defense witness has been called. Now, that said, this case has been particularly strong, with witness after witness essentially saying the same thing, that Libby was not forthcoming with federal investigators and the grand jury.
The defense claims Libby has a bad memory and had a lot on his mind at the time. According to Men's Fitness magazine, Albuquerque, New Mexico is America's fittest large city.
A lot of people, I guess, have been working out and running and doing healthful things.
Mayor Martin Chavez credits a healthy outdoor lifestyle and clean air. He says the only U.S. city with better air quality is Honolulu. On Wall Street today, the Dow lost 29 points, closing at 12,637. The NASDAQ down 2 points. The price of oil jumped $2 a barrel. This is CBS News.
Hey guys, Valentine's Day is here again. Remember your game plan for last year's Valentine's Day? That didn't work out too well, did it? Here's a better idea for this year. Go to the jewelry store at JCPenney. They are the undisputed Valentine's Day jewelry headquarters for diamonds, gold, gemstones, and watches, all the things women just love. You can get a 1/3-carat total weight diamond heart pendant right now for just $99.99. And they have fine jewelry and watches at 20 to 60% off all through February 14th. Now that's a game plan. JCPenney.
The Joneses like things fast. They use Zantac. It's fast, like last night after dinner.
Heartburn? Painful.
Zantac.
Thank you.
And then later.
Better? Completely. Zantac's fast.
The Joneses know Zantac quickly relieves the toughest heartburn and more, like before the Joneses family barbecue.
Ribs?
Heartburn.
Zantac.
Hurt?
Prevents.
Amazing.
Zantac's fast.
Zantac before a meal prevents heartburn. Zantac after a meal quickly stops heartburn. Maximum strength Zantac. It's
fast.
Uses directed, controls heartburn in 30 to 60 minutes.
It's happening all the time now. People caught on video in compromising, embarrassing, even incriminating situations. CBS News correspondent Steve Kathan reports on this phenomenon of the digital age.
Anyone can see it on YouTube.
You will stand quietly! You will back!
But the teacher yelling there never thought it would make it to the web, and his rant was caught on a cell phone camera.
The student wasn't supposed to have a cell phone in the classroom at all.
So some students who've done this are breaking school rules. But Lisa Sorenen of the National School Boards Association says large issues are in play here. Free speech, privacy, new high-tech frontiers.
One day it was writing harassing notes. The next day it was sending harassing emails. Then it was harassing profiles on MySpace, and now it's harassing videos on YouTube.
Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Los Angeles prosecutors are deciding whether to bring charges against actor Ryan O'Neal. Last weekend at his Malibu home, O'Neal fired a gun during a fight with his son Griffin. He said it was a warning shot. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
This Valentine's Day, send your sweetheart the gift that shines above all others. Name a star after them. I'm Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we will name a star after your sweetheart and send a beautiful gift package. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com for this year's hottest Valentine's Day gift.
Wouldn't it feel great if just once someone said to you, hey, you know what I noticed? You're a really good driver. But no one does. They take your impressive skills for granted. Well, Progressive will tell you. They're willing to say, yes, you are a good driver, and we're giving you a special rate, a special lower rate. You could save over $400 when you switch, just for being a good driver.
Good driver savings from Progressive. Switch today at Progressive.com. Progressive. It's about you, and it's about time.
Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Available everywhere but Massachusetts. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. 6 minutes after the hour, and it's time for my favorite part of the program. Never know what's going to happen, who's going to call, what they have to say. This is the Free Speech Zone, and I'd like to talk with you. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. The only topics I'd rather you not bring up are the NASA love triangle and the death of the gold digger Anna Nicole Smith. Anything else, though, is open for conversation here. From the bank heist last night. Our music of the moment is from Neil Young. His best friend was a robber. And this one's called Crime in the City. And his wife was a thief. All the children were killers. They couldn't get no relief. The bungalow was surrounded. And a voice loud and clear said, come on out with your hands up, or we'll blow you out of here. There was a face in the window. Now, if you go back all the way to 1968, when Boss Daley, that's Richard J. Daley Sr., the father of the current four- or five-term mayor, was running the machine there. They hosted the Democratic National Convention, the Yuppies and the Weather Underground. I'm sorry, it was Yippies, not Yuppies. The term Yuppie hadn't been invented in 1968. But the Yippies, the Weather Underground, and the SDS, all kinds of protesters converged on Chicago. And they caused a lot of problems. They were provocative. They were challenging the police, taunting them, throwing urine and feces at them, and all kinds of things. And in a famous malaprop, Mayor Daley said, the police are here to preserve disorder. Fast forward, 2004, August 31st, as the Republican National Convention convened in New York, the police were called upon once again to preserve disorder. And an investigation has led to the release of city records that indicate that more than 1,000 people were detained by the police for simply exercising their free speech rights or just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and got swept up with protesters. Now, to be fair, these protesters were much more tame than the 1968 anti-war or anti-Vietnam War protesters. Very few allegations of any attacks on police officers or other kinds of violence or law-breaking. And we've now learned that those protesters, over 1,000 of them, were held by police an average of 32.7 hours before they saw a judge. For people charged with crimes that the police decided were not related to the convention, the wait to see a judge was under 5 hours. What that means is there was a conscious decision made to detain these individuals, to lock them up, to keep them off the streets in violation of their rights to due process and a kind of selective enforcement or selective punishment that occurred prior to even an indictment or charges being filed against these individuals. They were held before they were permitted to go to court and enter a plea. The vast majority of those arrested were held on charges of roughly the same weight as a traffic ticket. And the law does not require fingerprinting. But some 1,100 people were taken into custody over a four-hour period and then detained for an additional 32 hours. Isn't it great when the police are there to preserve disorder? Lines are open for you this entire hour. It's the Free Speech Zone. No guests are calling in, just you. And if you're a first-time caller, you're welcome to join this conversation. We welcome contrary views or people who want to bring up a subject that we haven't been discussing. Again, as long as it's not Anna Nicole or Lisa Nowak. 888-5, Peter B. is the toll-free number. That's 888-573-8372. Ben and Salinas, thanks for holding. You're up first this hour.
Yes, Peter. I would like to register a comment on Wintada and Bremer. On the Wintada thing, The reason that court had to declare a mistrial is because in the opening statement, the court would not allow any legal questions regarding the illegality of this illegal war. And here's the thing.
Wait, Ben.
Yes, sir.
I understand your point in terms of what should have occurred,
uh-huh.
But that's not actually the legal reason that this happened.
I know that they said that they didn't have the justification, that he didn't understand the charges against him?
No, it's this stipulation that he signed, which I believe, and we're going to try to get his attorney, Eric Seitz, on to explain this in more detail. But from what I understand, this stipulation was intended for Ouattara simply to admit that he made the statements that were captured on videotape or printed in websites or newspapers that were going to be used as evidence against him. And he did that to avoid bringing in journalists like Sarah Olson, Dar Jamil, and a reporter for the Honolulu Advertiser, I think it is.
Well, isn't it time some high court realized the responsibility to we, the payee of their salaries, as to the legality or the illegality of the war?
Oh, I mean, I certainly agree with you on the thrust of your comments. That's what should be in play.
I understand.
But this judge very, very sharply limited what could be presented at the trial and explicitly ruled out any statements by Lieutenant Ouattara about the morality of the war or the criminal potential of following orders to deploy there.
Okay, point well taken. Okay, now on the Bremer thing. This man did not handle 363 tons of money by himself. Somebody drove those forklifts. There were bills of lading for delivery and departure. Wherever that money went to, somebody handled that money. These witnesses need to come out, and until Bremer's memory improves, he should be held at Abu Ghraib or maybe dunked in the water. That'll clean up his memory. Because that's people don't realize that $12 billion to $9 billion represents a lot of labor of American people whose lives could be vastly improved, but for the need of a very little bit of that money. That's the importance. It's not the bills themselves or the money. It's the damage done by the lack thereof, the money being deprived of we the people to whom it belongs,
But Ben, the people to whom it belongs are actually Iraqis. It's their money that we had collected and we were holding in essentially a trust account. We did this previously with Iran, where we embargoed some monies that were being funneled toward Iran, but we were able to intercept them because they originated in the United States. And so the money that was frittered away was money that belonged to the government of Iraq and, in turn, its people.
Well, okay, well, somebody needs to go to jail for this treason and fraud, and I'm waiting to see the House grow some brass ones there.
Okay, Ben.
Thank you, sir.
I got you. Loretta in Arcata, you're next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm first time, so I'm kind of nervous.
Well, welcome. It's easy.
Thank you. I guess I'm going to pick up right where the last caller went, where I've been listening to, I think I heard this on the Amy Goodman newscast about that there's some kind of plans in the works where Cheney is going to voluntarily resign due to health reasons, and they're going to replace him with Giuliani before they start any impeachment proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's Giuliani, and then when President Bush is impeached, then Giuliani becomes the president.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if this is true or not, but all I'm saying is that if we are going to impeach these lawbreakers, we need to think about it. Think long and hard how to go about it. It's not as easy as it was with Nixon.
Well, Loretta, you make an important point, and on this program, we've been discussing impeachment for over a year.
Right.
And there are many people who feel, and understandably so, that the evidence is overwhelming. The case has been made, and therefore, you know, we ought to proceed.
Right.
And as you probably know from listening, I believe that there is a very strong case there. But as you are suggesting, we have to really think through the consequences.
Right. We have to We have to think, too, because two people are the crime. We need to impeach the president and the vice president. They both are committed these crimes, and they must go together because we cannot allow Cheney to become president.
Now, let's put some of the issues aside and just look at one narrow facet here, Loretta.
What?
I don't believe that it would be possible to impeach them simultaneously.
Right.
And I also think that that would create not necessarily a constitutional crisis, but it could create a perceived weakness in the U.S. government that could be exploited by our enemies.
Absolutely.
And so, therefore, I believe that we would have to proceed against Dick Cheney first, and probably by the time those efforts, if they did reach fruition, were completed, we would be months away from the 2008 elections.
Right. And so if we were to impeach Cheney, then would they be allowed to pick who would be the next vice president? I remember that's what Spiro Agnew got impeached, and didn't Nixon just put somebody right in there?
Yeah, Gerald Ford, the recently departed. And so you're correct that if Cheney either resigns or is impeached, then the president gets to appoint a replacement subject to confirmation by the Senate. And my theory is that he would probably pick a senator, not Giuliani, because the most important thing would be to get that confirmation through. And certainly Giuliani's appointment would be quite controversial and would drag up a lot of issues that Bush would rather not deal with, such as we discussed yesterday with Kyle Hintz about 9/11, Bernie Kerik, and some of the other blights or blemishes on the record of Rudy Giuliani. I want to thank you for your call. I got to run to a break.
Thank you so much for talking.
And you survived, didn't you, as a first-timer? Well,
all
do
right,
it again, Loretta. Call me back. 888-5 Peter B. I've got most of my lines open right now, and I'm waiting for you to call. First timers are welcome, and you see, you can survive. 888-5 Peter B. 888-573-8372. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins. You're listening to KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience, who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Well, once again, good afternoon. I'm Frank Sullivan with traffic on KRXA 540. We don't have a lot going on the roadways other than some sprinkles falling on the highways and freeways around the area. Highway 1 actually looks good through Monterey and Carmel at this hour. We still have some slowing as we usually do on the Fishhook Connector from southbound 17 through Aptos at this point. And we have some homeless encampment apparently very near lanes of traffic as you make the transition in the other direction from northbound 1 over to northbound 17. That we're brought to you by Office Depot. Office Depot can help you create professional-looking documents from small jobs to bound presentations. Office Depot is taking care of business. OfficeDepot.com. That's traffic. I'm Frank Sullivan on KRXA 540. Wow. It's the artist formerly known as the artist formerly known as Prince. Poetic justice to see him perform in the Purple Rain of Miami at the Stupid Bowl. Zone, taking your calls on any subject from any point of view here on the PBC show. Lines available for you right now, so give us a call. As you heard, Loretta was a first-time caller and came out unscathed. 888-5, Peter B. is the toll-free number. It's 1, then 38-573-8372. 888-573-8372. You can also drop me an email 24/7 to Peter at peterbcollins.com. Sarge is up from Columbia, Mississippi. Hello, Sarge. How are you today?
Doing fine, Peter. And you?
Not too bad, thanks.
Well, listen, I'm going to give you some really good positive news. How's that sound?
I'd love it.
All righty. You're familiar with KPHX in Phoenix, correct?
Well, we're live on KPHX in Phoenix right this very minute.
I love that station. I love that city. I don't know if you're aware of the Mississippi mission they have had going on.
I am aware of that. Yes, sir.
Well, we are having...
But do us a favor and explain it for the listeners in Monterey and Eureka and Coos Bay.
Well, I'll be more than happy to. Head On Radio Network, NOVM Radio Network, KPHX, and my site, unreportednews.net, got together, and we formed a project to get goods donated, like refrigerators, building materials, children's shoes, stuff like that, to go to Jackson County, Mississippi. They had two 40-foot storage containers in the parking lot there at the station. They filled both of them up. They're loading them on three trucks this Saturday. They're having a truck loading party, so everybody in the area go by, help them out. Jeff Ferris' show is going to be donated strictly to Katrina on Saturday, so tune in for that. And they're going to put all these together. They're going to drive the trucks to Jackson County, Mississippi, and arrive on Valentine's afternoon.
Great.
And Jim Yancey of Jackson County Community Services Coalition will be taking this into his warehouse. He will get it out to the people. And a lot of people are going to be able to get some relief thanks to this.
And let me direct people to a couple of websites. The website for KPHX is AAPHX.com, or you can go to NovaMRadio.com and get more information on this effort.
or you can go to unreportednews.net.
Okay.
Don't forget me. But it's a wonderful thing, and there's people all over the country. Look, just because this one ends in February doesn't mean that we won't do it anymore.
Right.
Anybody that wants to do it, they can contact me. We'll set it up. We'll work with everybody. The people in Phoenix just, I mean, I'm about in tears thinking about how beautiful they have done it. And Jim Yancey was feeling like the world was caving in, but this has given him new life. And it's just done a wonder for the people, and we're so appreciative. And I just wanted to get that out because I don't think we can say enough good things about Dr. Mike Newcomb and John and all of them, because they have done one hell of a good job. And everyone join the Founders Club. Let's support these people. This is a wonderful organization.
Got you, Sarge. Thanks for shouting out.
Thank you.
All right, my pleasure. Mary in Phoenix, you're next here on the PBC show. Go right ahead.
Hey, Peter. Nice to talk to you. I listen to your show all the time. First-time caller.
Excellent.
You know, I was listening to the guy you were, or the woman you were talking to about, you know, we can't impeach them both at the same time. You know, honest to God, I don't think we've got a choice at this point. And if we impeach them both, wouldn't that put Pelosi in line to take over the White House till the elections?
Well,
I mean, I think we're much better off to have Pelosi in there and maybe be a little weak for a few minutes than have them pull the trigger on Iran.
I just think that the climate of the country won't permit that. I don't disagree with you in an ideal way, but, you know, the Republicans still have a great deal of traction. We've seen it in the Senate this week. And if you attempt to do it, then the motives of the Democrats are going to be defined in the most narrow and partisan and mean-spirited ways.
You know, they say that about Democrats anyway, no matter what we do. And frankly, I think, and you're right, with Tim out sick in the Senate, we don't have the votes there. But I think by mere virtue of doing the proceedings, it's going to shine the light on them, and I don't think they'd be able to. I think that's our only chance at them not dropping the bomb.
Mary,
I
got to take a break. Hold on, I want to talk with you further about this after the break. And grab a line and talk with us now. 888-5 Peter B. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hey everybody, this is Larry from Acme Coffee Roasting Company in Seaside, and I want to know if you're tired of wading through hacky sackers and laptop zombies just to receive a mediocre cup of joe by some underwhelmed employee somewhere. Well, you come on down to Acme Coffee Roasting Company. Meet the local hardworking folks all around you. We roast the coffee every day. We're owner-operated and totally qualified. Why don't you come on down and see how we turned a little alleyway in Seaside, California into a place to grab a good cup of joe. At the corner of Broadway and Contra Costa, come on down, my friends. Just drink it. Resist corporate coffee.
Are you tired of hearing no when applying for a home loan? Is your credit shot due to late payments, bankruptcy, or recent foreclosure? Do you need help purchasing a home or refinancing your existing home? Well, now there is help. Every Saturday and Sunday morning from 7 to 8 here on KRXA 540 AM, listen live to national radio host Ken Michaels of Mortgage Makeovers as he doles out simple answers in plain English to your mortgage and finance questions.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant at Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's a Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. It's 33 minutes after the hour. We're midway through the free speech zone here today. Your calls and comments welcome. 888-5-PETER-B.
Sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within.
Can you dig it?
Smiling faces.
888-5 Peter B here in the free speech zone, and Mary's still on with us from Phoenix. We were talking about the practical aspects of attempting to impeach Bush and Cheney. And it's interesting, Mary, because as we were discussing earlier with the former assistant U.S. attorney, Elizabeth De La Vega, what seems really unnecessary was the manner in which Nancy Pelosi, quote-unquote, took impeachment off the table.
Absolutely.
Because, again, you know, you and I are very aware of the potential blowback and unintended consequences of this process, while at the same time recognizing that laws have been broken. The oath of office that was taken by the president and vice president has been violated repeatedly. And, we have a constitutional mandate, in my opinion, to hold people accountable. And it's so easy to say this, but, you know, I think it's important to say again that if the Republicans drove us through the entire impeachment process over Monica Lewinsky's affair with Bill Clinton, this is so much more significant than that. And now we have Dana Rohrabacher, who is a surfing neocon from Orange County, who is suggesting impeachment of the president over a very minor issue, an irrelevant one in fact, about some Border Patrol agents who've gotten sideways with the law. Their cases are worthy of discussion and consideration. But for a Republican like Rohrabacher to propose impeachment on that basis and ignore the stinky elephant that is in everybody's living room is just amazing.
Well, Peter, he had to do that, because if he didn't go after some, you know, and I'm not saying that that's not an important thing, but after all the other crap that that Bush and his administration has done, and Rohrabacher just stood by and never said a word. So, of course, he's got to ignore all that stuff and go after this thing. But I think they're all scared, and I think they're all scared that, you know, we are going into Iran. You know, Bush, I'll tell you, he's got that drug addict, alcoholic mentality that, you know, oh, screw it, I'm already in enough trouble mentality. Why not? And I think, and I was thinking about this today, I think it's quite possible, too, that he's also one of these guys that has a fear of success. The guy has failed at absolutely everything he's ever tried, you know, and you couple those two things together. I mean, he's about sabotaging himself. Well, he's had all the money in the entire world behind every venture he's ever done. The Saudis have always been there for him, you know, and this guy cannot put, you know, a deal together.
Right, and Daddy
the only thing he thinks he can do is go blow stuff up.
And Daddy can't bail him out this time.
Yeah.
Mary, thanks for your call. I appreciate your passion. Let's talk again.
Okay, Peter, thank you.
All right, real good. And, caller, you hold on. We're going to be back with you in a moment here. I want to turn on Matt Renner's microphone here. He is the excellent producer of the Peter B. Collins Show, and he moonlights as a correspondent for truthout.org. And if you go to the Truthout homepage, there are two articles by Matt Renner up there right now. The one I want to talk about with you, Matt, is the one you posted on Wednesday, yesterday, called Presidential Financing Fix. And it's interesting because John McCain, who positions himself as the godfather of campaign finance reform, and the leading Democratic contenders all appear to be poised to opt out of the public financing system and raise hundreds of millions of dollars from wealthy Americans and corporations to fund their campaigns. Give us a quick sketch of what you describe in the piece.
Well, I think that's an important point.
Wait a minute. You're not turned on there. The switch is on. Try it again. Let me look over here.
Ah.
Now we've got you. There was a little knob turned down.
How about that?
It's getting better.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay.
All right. I think I did that when I was filling in for you, or when I was working the board while you're gone. Well, my piece basically focuses on the presidential financing system that gives public money through a little checkoff system on your tax form to people who qualify as legitimate candidates for president.
Mm-hmm.
The checkoff form is a whole other issue, but what you asked is why people are opting out, it looks like. And one of the main reasons Hillary's decided to opt out, and it looks like McCain will, although, as I said in my piece, he hasn't decided yet, apparently, according to his campaign, is that the way the presidential financing works is that candidates in the primary have to agree to certain spending limits. And those spending limits severely hampered John Edwards last year. And George W. Bush also gained a significant advantage by opting out in the primary because he was able to spend, you know, the reason, the incentive for opting into the presidential financing system is that the system matches you dollar for dollar that you raise for the first $250 that you raise. Bush was able to opt out because his campaign contributions came in $2,000 checks instead of in $250 or lower contributions that would have been matched, and he had an amazing fundraising structure, as John McCain and Hillary Clinton probably will also.
Yeah.
So Hillary's opted out and is actually setting a goal of for some of her fundraisers to raise $1 million each, meaning they'd have to get, what is that, $500, $2,000 checks each?
Mm-hmm. Which is bundle them.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Is it $500 or $5,000?
Well, the amount went up to, I'm fuzzy on this, but it used to be $2,000 and it has gone up. I don't know what
because of inflation?
Yeah.
Slightly, okay.
I think it was adjusted by McCain-Feingold, if I'm not mistaken, but I'm not thoroughly positive.
Okay. McCain-Feingold raised it from $1,000 to $2,000.
Okay.
And cut off all soft money contributions.
Okay.
It could be indexed for inflation, so there might be some dollars we're missing there. But it's, you know, they have to raise all of this money in practically $2,000 increments, which is amazing if you're trying to raise $2 million.
Yeah.
So it's going to be another fundraising affair. One of the main arguments in favor of fixing the presidential financing system, one of my favorites is at least that it's going to give these people a lot more time to focus on talking to the individuals who are going to be voting for them, you know, the voting public and the media in general, as opposed to doing these photo ops with a soundbite and then rushing off to their dinner where they have to make a speech and collect $2,000 checks from everyone at the table. the fix that's proposed is actually going to increase the matching funds to 4-to-1,
mm-hmm.
so that people would actually be, there'd be a very significant incentive to
take
the money, mm-hmm. as well as increasing the spending cap so that there's no, they're going to increase the spending caps and they're going to change the time frame to allow more, for more flexibility so people don't get screwed over like Edwards did when mm-hmm. he was facing Kerry.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's an interesting development reported in the New York Times today that Barack Obama is kind of straddling this issue. On the one hand, he has issued a call to his rivals to propose a voluntary agreement between the two major party nominees that would limit the fundraising and spending in the general election. But he has taken what they describe as a twist here in the Times article. His campaign asked the Federal Election Commission if Obama could begin soliciting private donations with the understanding that he might later return the money to those contributors. Essentially, he wants to see if he can raise enough money to justify bailing out of the federal funding program, but he wants to hedge his bets so that if he doesn't raise enough money, he could use the federal pot, or I think if there's negative reaction, he could retreat from that position.
Right, and I think that one thing that's important to think about is the herd mentality with the people who are practically investors in these people's campaign, the people who donate money to these campaigns. Their money's going to flow with the leader because they don't want to be missing their investment to not pay off. So Obama basically wants to put his foot out in the water and see if people really have a significant... if there's a significant amount of drive to get him, get another candidate besides Hillary. If there isn't, he's going to still challenge her by taking the federal money.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to be, I will be surprised if the FEC allows him to do that.
Yeah. This article goes on related to Obama. If he won the Democratic nomination, he could then strike a deal with the Republican nominee to return their private donations and use only public funds. And for 08, it would be $85 million per campaign for the general election. Now, based on what was spent in 2004, that's only a portion of what I believe Bush spent about $200 million. And I believe the Democrats spent close to that, like $150, $160 million.
Now, I don't know if those numbers are total in that they're you're counting spending by the parties.
Yeah.
Because both Kerry and Bush stayed under the cap last year.
Mm-hmm.
So they spent, I believe it was $100 million or $75 million each in the general just from their campaigns.
Right.
Now, the parties are different.
I do recall that Kerry had this decision to make because he was nominated at the convention so early, and he couldn't access the federal money until September.
Right.
And so he was trying to figure out a way to stay relatively clean while not going off television, essentially, during the whole month of August, which he ended up doing.
Now, before we wrap this up, I want to make one comment about the impeachment issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it has something to do with the campaign finance. I mean, because we're into this race so early, and because a lot of the candidates are senators,
mm-hmm.
I have a pretty strong feeling that the impeachment is not going to happen because it's, frankly, it's bad for business.
Yeah.
And that's what these people need right now is the support of big business. Impeachment throws things into shambles, and that's horrible for the market. So
mm-hmm.
I doubt it's going to be they're going to be able to stomach it unless something comes out. And this Libby trial could be it, that something comes out that forces everyone to turn against the legitimacy of the presidency.
Well, but the denial capacity of the Republican Party in this country appears to be unfathomable. And so it's just hard to imagine that they would ever embrace principle like that. The other factor is that because so many senators are running for president from both parties, it's hard to get to the 60 or 66 votes that you would need to remove a president.
Right.
Because of those factors, the ambition and the alliances. Thank you, Matt.
Sure. I
want to direct people to truthout.org, where you can read the article that we've been talking about. It's called Presidential Financing Fix. Now to Alan in Phoenix. Thanks for holding, Alan. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter B. How are you?
Not too bad today.
Good, sir. A couple of issues. The lady who spoke previously, she said Bush has never been successful, but he's always been successful at failing. So, you know, he can do some things. Now, as far as this issue of impeachment, everybody wants to hit a home run. What I think you should do is go at the weakest link and that's probably Alberto Gonzalez.
Mm.
It's amazing. If you were to go after him because of his, impeach him, and remove him from the scene, you'd be surprised at the things that will happen, the information that will come available that will allow you to get at these other criminals as well.
Alan, yeah. I have never thought of that. I mean, I certainly am offended by many of the things that Gonzalez has done, particularly the NSA spying program, the detainees at Guantanamo, his tortured interpretation of the Constitution and the Geneva Conventions on down the line. But I'd never thought about strategery here trying to impeach him to open up the can of worms and essentially force the issue.
If you attack him, he's the weakest link. He's the top lawyer in the entire country. If you attack him and put him on the stand, he will squeal and he will put forth information that will bring the others down as well.
Well, and maybe we ought to just force him to go on that really bad game show called The Weakest Link.
Right. Let me say,
is that still in production? I don't know.
Now, I know she said the impeachment's not on the table, but big deal. Had she not said that at the time that she did say it, she may have not ever become Speaker of the House. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In fact, she said it doesn't mean a hill of beans at all. Whether or not they're going to be impeached is based on finding out what they did and if they've done it.
Mm-hmm.
So I
will say that off the table is not a categorical or finite kind of a statement.
No.
And certainly something that's off the table could be put back on the table if there is sufficient evidence and a groundswell of public opinion.
And she said that last year. I mean, this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, Alan, thanks for your cogent points. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, sir.
888-5 Peter B. There's room for your call in our final free speech segment here coming up. Grab a line and we'll talk. 888-5 Peter B. 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
You got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right. Dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Ropp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Well, once again, good afternoon. I'm Frank Sullivan with traffic on KRXA 540. We don't have a lot going on the area's roadways. No major stalls, delays, or accidents to report in Monterey or Carmel. We do have an accident on Highway 9 at Skyline Boulevard in Santa Clara County. Up in the mountains, a two-car crash. That is reportedly partially blocking the roadway, and that's been out there for a little while. And we have slowing, as we usually do, on the Fishhook Connector from southbound 17 on to southbound Highway 1 through Aptos. Just a reminder, too, Pebble Beach, of course, this weekend. Expect delays on Highway 1 and on Highway 68 heading in. And that word brought to you by JCPenney. Guys, Valentine's Day. Go to the jewelry store at JCPenney. Get 20 to 60% off through February 14th. JCPenney. I'm Frank Sullivan with traffic on KRXA 540.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We're in the free speech zone. More calls coming up here in just a second, but I can't resist sharing this with you. People find out my email address through radio stations and websites, and then I get some of the weirdest stuff from PR firms. And this one came from Todd at spreadthenewspr.com. And somehow he imagines that the Peter B. Collins Show and our esteemed audience would be interested in the Fish and Flush Aquarium toilet tank. Yes, friends, it's a unique new product whose decorative appeal could turn the bathroom into the most talked about room in the house. The Fish and Flush is a clear two-piece toilet tank that replaces a standard toilet tank and cleverly contains a fully functional aquarium inside. The Fish and Flush's insert can be filled with water for fish or left dry for use as a terrarium for a pet reptile or to house colorful plants or foliage. One night in a disco on the outskirts. I gotta get one. I mean, I'm doing a bathroom remodel, and how could I complete it without the Fish and Flush? All right, the Fish and Flush. Everybody's got to get one. Jake and Arcata, hey, how you doing?
Hey, Peter B., what's up?
Not too much.
Yeah, I was just calling to talk to you about some of the Republican presidential contenders, specifically Arizona's John McCain.
Uh-huh. And by the way, tomorrow in our first hour, we're going to be talking with Cliff Schechter, who is a guy who's blogging at, what's it called, Matt? TheRealMcCain.com. So for our Phoenix listeners in particular, that's going to be interesting. And also we're going to talk about global warming in the first hour with Andy Revkin from the New York Times. But I digress, or actually I interrupted you. Go ahead, Jake.
Oh, that's great. I'll tune in for that first hour tomorrow. Hey, Peter B., John McCain, if anybody's seen the polls lately, McCain's presidential ambitions are going away rather rapidly. And from what I've been reading, a lot of the people who signed on to McCain's campaign are thinking they made a mistake. Because, I mean, I can't think of anything stupider for any presidential contender in 2008 to do than what John McCain did. He tied his entire presidential hopes to George W. Bush's surge in Iraq. It was McCain, after all, who was pushing for this escalation. And let's just be very clear about what John McCain is really about. John McCain is a guy who wants to talk about cleaning up politics, but this is the guy, of course, who was involved with Charles Keating back in the day. And he supposedly, you know, didn't care for Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson or their kind of personal attack politics. But when it came down to it, John McCain has been sucking up to those people.
And let me add to that. He has also recruited some of the most vile members of the Bush campaign team and its network of cronies, including the guy who worked on the Swift boat spots against John Kerry and the guy who did the disgusting attack ads on Harold Ford, you know, the Playboy gal or whatever she was. Come on, Harold, call me. Those people have been recruited to his campaign team.
That's just pathetic, considering the fact that Bush, and of course, in 2000 in South Carolina, just unleashed those awful racist attacks on his child, on those attacks on his wife, on her mental instability and her drug use. You know, all those things that the Bush campaign did John McCain in 2000. John McCain is so ambitious and so unethical and cares so little about his own family that he decided he was going to be George W. Bush's best friend.
Jake, you know, the one thing that I was prepared to respect John McCain for was the effort that he started and then abandoned to fight the Bush administration on torture, on the Geneva Conventions, and on the treatment of detainees at Guantanamo and elsewhere. And he operated first from a principled position based on his own experience. And then he was rolled by the White House. and he accepted it. He not only accepted a watered-down version, it was, I believe, an amendment to the Defense Appropriation Bill. That was back in 05. But he then remained mute when the president issued a signing statement that neutered the very amendment that McCain had attached to that defense appropriations bill. Then you come forward into the 2006 pre-election cycle. The Military Commissions Act was introduced by the White House just after Labor Day and jammed through. And the shame is on both sides of the aisle, because the Democrats were content to sit back and let McCain and Lindsey Graham and John Warner take the White House on over this. And then, as I point out, John McCain got rolled, and the bill that came out doesn't resemble his original position in almost any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it's just sad to see John McCain just, you know, destroying his own political future. And as far as this goes in 2008 with the Republicans, it looks like Giuliani is now the front runner. And I don't see personally how Giuliani can actually win the nomination, considering that he's for abortion rights, that he supports gay rights. You know, the conservatives, the Jerry Falwells, Pat Robertsons, and their legions, they're going to defeat Giuliani at some point. So McCain isn't going to be the nominee. Giuliani isn't going to be the nominee. I don't think Romney has a chance in hell. So who is this? It would be Newt Gingrich? Is Newt Gingrich on his way back? I mean, the Republicans are just sad. If that's the best they got, the Republicans should just go out of business.
Hey, don't forget, Jeb's available.
Yeah, Jeb Bush. Yeah, right. Like, he has a political future. Remember what he said just a few weeks ago? He said to Spanish language reporters down in Miami, they were interviewing him, asking him what he's going to do now that he's term limited out as governor of Florida. And Jeb Bush told them in Spanish, "No tengo futuro," which means I have no future. So out of Jeb Bush's own mouth, he admits he has no future. It's all George W. Bush's fault.
Thank you, Jake.
Thanks, Peter.
All right, my pleasure. Chris and Salinas, you get the final word tonight on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, Peter, you don't have a fishing flush? Everybody has a fishing flush. All right, get with it.
I just bought a new toilet. It's called a Toto, and I was told it's the top of the line. It hasn't been installed yet, but maybe I'll send it back and get myself a fishing flush.
Hey, that one, the caller before Jake there, he brought up going after Gonzalez. That's a strategy that John Dean has put forth, going after the little fish.
Uh-huh.
And you might look into, there's an article I know that was on Common Dreams that I read, and he spells out that situation of going after the small fries and let mm-hmm. them turn over all the other fish in the flesh and fish.
Well, I hope that's the strategy that Patrick Fitzgerald is using, and that Libby is not the beginning and the end of his prosecutions, because, you know, we've seen enough about Cheney in particular exposed in this trial that could be useful in impeachment proceedings or even in a criminal proceeding. Chris, thanks for your call today. I got to run.
Happy trails to you.
Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll be back at you tomorrow, same time, same stations. Will you join me?
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, find out what it's like to own property on the south of France or Spain and other great European countries. Meet the folks of MRI Overseas Property. Scott Neff, International Marketing Director of McAnthony Realty, will share his knowledge of what it takes to buy real estate overseas. Rock Roller Real Estate, your number one source for all your real estate needs, every Sunday morning at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Billy Sunshine Show.
Billy Sunshine Show.
With P-Lar. With P-Lar.
Sunday at 3 o'clock, we're going to be doing something new, something different, or we'll do the same old thing, take your phone calls. One thing we know for sure, I'll have something to say. What? I don't know. I never know until I've said it. Find out what's the next thing to come out of my mouth.
The Billy Sunshine Show with P-Lar.
Sundays from 3 to 5.
3 to 5. On AM 540. KRXA.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. She was just 39 years old. Anna Nicole Smith died suddenly today of undetermined causes. CBS News correspondent Kelly Cobiella has the story.
Hi.
The roller coaster life of Anna Nicole Smith crashed to an end at the Hard Rock Hotel in Hollywood, Florida. A private nurse found her in her room, unconscious.
This afternoon,
We were advised by hospital personnel that Anna Nicole Smith had died.
It's not yet clear what killed her, a mysterious end to a tabloid life for a woman who bared her body and her personal life to the public.
Smith had only recently emerged from seclusion after the birth of her daughter and the death just days later of her 20-year-old son. She was still battling over the estate of her late husband, the elderly oil billionaire Howard Marshall. And People magazine editor Larry Sutton says there were other legal issues.
She had a class action suit against her filed by people who claimed that Trim Spa, the diet pill that she advertises, wasn't all it was meant to be. And she also, within 2 weeks, was supposed to turn over DNA evidence in a paternity suit that was filed against her by a photographer out in Los Angeles.
He claims to be the father of Smith's baby girl. How many American kids are autistic? More than previously thought, according to federal health officials, CBS News correspondent Howard Arenstein reports.
Two new government surveys put the prevalence of autism among 8-year-old children at about 1 in 150. That's about 10 to 15% higher than previous estimates. Critics say that could be because the people doing the diagnoses are widening the definition of who's affected. But Dr. Melissa Nishawala says it also could be because parents are more sensitive to the issue.
People are looking more for that diagnosis in order to get services that people know will actually help a child.
So one way or the other, more kids are being treated for autism. Howard Arenstein, CBS News, Washington.
The snow just keeps coming in northern New York. CBS News correspondent Kelly Wallace reports.
With a whopping 70 inches of snow blanketing the small town of Oswego, New York, since Sunday, and another foot expected overnight, Lou Ann Ketchum has had enough.
It's exhausting.
What do you think when they say more snow?
It can't possibly happen. There's no way.
Mother Nature's might is even too much for the big rig.